Hey folks, you know what time it is. It's Sunset Lake Sebade time. Our friends up at Sunset Lake Farms sent us some new tinctures to try, and we are so excited to share them with you. Introducing Sunset Lake's new Focus Sebade and Sebeje oil tincture. What is Sebeje, you ask?
I really don't know.
Yeah. It's hard to even discern what I'm saying. Well,
You just trying not to say big
I keep thinking CBGBs, like that
club.
place that closed, yeah, and is now some store, home goods store, or something like that. Anyway, well, early clinical studies suggest that Sebejay can can enhance verbal memory, manage pain, and promote a more focused mental state. They have added a splash of natural citrus flavor, as well as Sebade, which can promote a sense of calm and balance, perfect for what you need to buckle down and get stuff done. Sunset Lake is a company that we always sing its praises because they, have a high minimum wage for their employees, are partially employee-owned. They have done fundraisers and donated parts of the money that they make to strike funds, to refugee resettlement, and more. We partnered with them on that stuff. And I'm a daily user of Sunset Lake Sebade. I've got literally four products here on my desk. And then at home, that's what helps me get to sleep. The stuff with the melatonin in the gummies, and the tincture in particular are my favorites. But I also really enjoy the relaxed gummies. I'll pop one of those often before I commute home. But they've got salves that help with your skin. They've got lotions, both scented and unscented. And I'm not allowed to use the scented here, but I love it. For right now, you get 25% off all Sebade oil tinctures, including the brand new Focus Sebade and Sebade oil tincture, if you use the code CBG 26. That's how you actually say it. So that, again, that's the new Focus tincture, and they're kicking it off during a 25% sale on all of their Sebade oil tinctures. Just use the code CBG26 at checkout. That's CBG26. Head on over to sunsetlakesebade.com and use coupon code CBG26 to save 25% on all their tinctures, including the new Focus Sebade and Sebeje oil. This sale ends July 28th at midnight Eastern Time. See their site for additional terms and restrictions. And now, time for the show.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Thursday, July 23rd, 2026. My name is Emma Vigeland, in for Sam Cedar, and this is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Austin Coker will be back with us to discuss how ICE is quietly arresting more people than ever. And later in the show, Cori Bush, former congresswoman and candidate in Missouri's 1st congressional district, joins us to talk about her race. Also on the program, the House passes the $1.15 trillion defense authorization bill, including the portion expanding and cementing U.S. and Israeli military and tech cooperation, which is not good, folks. A separate war powers resolution passes, however. Four Republicans joined all Democrats to rein in Trump's Iran war, at least symbolically. the U.S. has bombed Iran for the 12th straight night, and oil prices are back up to $100 a barrel. The House also advanced the $95 billion reconciliation package, most of which goes to funding that Iran war, with some farm assistance that they need because of the Iran war. Oh, and also the tariffs and voter suppression funds. Questions still remain, though, if they have enough Republican votes and if it's going to count towards a reconciliation process, because it's very flimsy in its budgetary, I guess, character. Murkowski jumps ship on the $10 billion in grants to incentivize voter ID laws. The House also passed the Republican stock trading ban, the one that doesn't force them to sell existing stocks or bar them from buying crypto, authored by a guy that took a bunch of money from the crypto industry. You'll be shocked to learn. At least 1.5 million children have lost food assistance as a result of Trump's cuts to SNAP last summer. Earlier today, Ben-Gavir joined other Israeli extremists storming the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Trump tries to ram through the Abraham Accords, says he'll only strike a deal with Saudi Arabia, giving them access to U.S. nuclear technology, if they normalize with Israel. Hey, dude, Israel's not really in great standing with a lot of people right now. I'm not sure if you've heard. House Republicans subpoena left-wing outlet Breakthrough News. More McCarthyite resurgence. In Wisconsin, police officers fatally shot a man in his 30s. Details are still emerging, but protests sparked last night in Madison. And lastly, South Carolina and Nevada are jockeying to be the first state in the Democratic 2028 primary calendar. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome to the show, everybody. It's an M Majority Report Thursday. Hello, Matt. Hello, Brian. I sent you guys a little IM, by the way. Just check that. Cool. Hello to everybody in the audience. Yes, Sam is still out, even though this is my typical day. He will be out next week, but he will be back after that. He'll come into August guns blazing, and he'll tell you where he's been, which is... He's been on vacation with Dave Rubin. They've mended fences. That's part of why he wanted to keep things, you know, a little bit under wraps, right? A triumphant return, them holding hands and walking into the studio on Monday. Can you imagine? I want to give credit to there's someone, and maybe we'll show it in the fun half. A fan on Twitter. Look, this is the only, in my view, use of AI that I can enjoy, or they just photoshopped it. I don't know if they used AI for this, but
presumably.
I was laughing. So, do we have this picture? I mean, I retweeted it, but
people can check Emma's.
People can check out we posted it on Instagram too. This image of Sam as Mitch McConnell, and me as Elaine Chao, which is quite good. Proof of life. Proof of life. Anyway, yesterday, the House advanced the budget bill and also the NDAA. And in this bill, the reconciliation package, the former, there's $95 billion that is in that pot of money. It funds the Iran war to the tune of $73 billion. And we covered this yesterday, but this is after they already had an $1 trillion budget from last year, and they had $150 billion in supplemental, and they had $75 billion just laying around, and they were asking for even more. It included Iran war goodies, but also other things that the Pentagon wanted related to the National Guard, related to deploying the army at the southern border, and Democrats were asking, like, hey, is this, like... the normal procedure here? Why do you need all of this money? But it also doles out farm assistance due to the impacts of Trump's own tariffs and the Iran war's impact on fertilizer prices, because so much of the material needed to make fertilizers move through the Strait of Hormuz.
Particularly ammonia.
Right. And it also included this $10 billion piece for voter suppression. And they were able to win over the Republican hardliners with the inclusion of that $10 billion, but they, because they wanted the full SAVE Act. This is just a fraction of what's in the SAVE Act. And this $10 billion would purportedly act as grants that would be given out to states that do voter suppression. So voter ID mandates, proving your citizenship, and it just, it gives a financial incentive to, for states to do that. So we still don't know, though, if this part will hold up in the Senate. Murkowski is not happy about this, and it would have to go through the reconciliation process in the Senate, which would mean that it needs to pertain to the budget. And look, Republicans break rules all the time, but there are questions about whether or not these grants pertain to the budget. And the only other option, which is what Trump was trying to desperately get for months, and is a big reason that Cornyn lost his endorsement to Paxton, and Paxton is the nominee in Texas, was he wanted to get rid of the filibuster to not even have the SAVE Act obviously be through the budgetary process and just pass it on an up and down vote. But John Thune's like, dude, the filibuster is the best thing for Republicans. Don't do this. Like, we need this in the future. And it's all the more reason that Democrats should, because as we've said, the Senate is already an undemocratic institution. At one point, there were 50 Democratic senators under Biden, 50 Republican senators. You've probably heard me say this before. And the 50 Democrats represented 40 million more people. It's just by the nature of how the Senate is. Montana has two senators. Wyoming has two senators. But California and New York also have two senators. It's undemocratic, even if there was no filibuster. And on top of that, you need a 60-vote threshold. This is why, like, DSA says things like abolish the Senate on their website and in their program. For long-term goal.
Well, you don't like America's institutions?
It ain't that bad. Yeah,
that
no.
We've revised to be more democratic in the best times of this country before and should do it again. Yes.
Yeah, we've already revised the Senate. They weren't directly elected prior to that revision. So, I mean, like that, there's so many things we should do to make this country more democratic. Eliminating the Electoral College is another. But I digress.
More judicial review from a stacked Supreme Court.
Right. The other congressional item yesterday that was voted on ahead of the upcoming recess was the National Defense Authorization, the NDAA. What a shock. They found just enough Democrats to pass this. It's so weird how they can always find six or seven, and they don't always, they're not always the same. Like, Brian made this great point just before the show. Jared Moskowitz was not included here. In terms of the Democrats that voted for the NDAA, one of the biggest hawks and Zionist plants in Congress on the Democratic side, he might be a little bit worried about Oliver Larkin. Another candidate or member of Congress who did not vote for the NDAA is Josh Gottheimer. Gottheimer's in New Jersey. I mean, you know,
who do they think they're fooling?
But I mean, they are. They've done this before. It's fooled enough people, right? And
I also think, though, like, do you think people are more sensitive? Because I do, to the revolving door hypothesis. Because I think even normal people are getting in on that. Like, they just find enough votes to get this stuff through. There are secret Republicans that call themselves Democrats.
I think normal people and Democratic voters are starting to get a little wise to it, I guess. You know, and I think maybe not to this particular tactic, perhaps in terms of that being more widely spread. But, like, Democrats acting as Republicans, people understand that with their AIPAC donations. That's starting to be, at the very least, common knowledge amongst Democratic voters. But the six Democrats who voted for this bill were Henry Cuellar, typical. He's
Pelosi endorsed.
An anti-abortion Democrat who was almost defeated by a phenomenal candidate, Jessica Cisneros, but Pelosi and Clyburn intervened on his behalf. Davis, who's a typical vote on this. Jared Golden, a typical vote on this. Adam Gray of California. Vicente Gonzalez of Texas. And Mary Glusenkamp Perez. Who, you know, she'll be kitschy on her pet issues, but when it comes to supporting the establishment, she is in as as establishment as it gets. There were seven Republicans who opposed it: Breachin, Burchett, Kane, Hageman, Anna Paulia Luna, Chip Roy, and of course Thomas Massey, but yet it passed. And the most controversial portion, which we were asking our audience to call their representatives about, one of the most controversial portions was Section 219, the provision that essentially effectively requires the United States to entangle itself with Israeli military technology and have the U.S. military collaborate with it in a permanent way that moves outside of the, you know, traditional kind of democratic input in Congress about this thing as Israel sees public opinion slipping away.
Yeah, instead of aid, we're partnering.
Mm-hmm. There's a reason that Netanyahu keeps going on TV saying, I told Lindsey Graham, we don't want any more American aid, before he died. And he insisted and got very upset with me at this notion. Yeah, it's because,
just give us a wing of the Pentagon instead.
Yes, it's because they know that this is the tactic that they're pursuing, especially because Israel relies on U.S. funding in this permanent way from a memorandum of understanding that expires in 2028. What else happens in 2028? Like, it's going to be one of the biggest campaign issues. So Netanyahu is like, all right, let's get this done. I mean, it literally creates a new position at the Pentagon that has that person is tasked with integrating Israeli military tech into the U.S. military and vice versa. It creates a whole new office and person and personnel, I should say, to deal with this. AIPAC was thrilled about this. Here is their press release. Today, the House of Representatives passed its fiscal year 2027 NDAA, which includes key provisions that strengthen the U.S.-Israel defense partnership, $750 million for U.S.-Israel cooperation program, $65 million increase over fiscal year 2026.
I would just draw a line under a defense partnership. This is the partnership that started the war that has the world economy melting down.
Yes, it's the...
defensive war.
The genocide partnership, which, you know, they're putting the ring on it.
Yeah, exactly. You become a partner now. You used to be an understudy.
Let's get a joint checking account. That's essentially
Well,
yeah.
Seems like we've kind of...
Yeah, I get it. All right. It's not perfect, Matt. okay. So, $65 million increase over fiscal year 2026, including $500 million for missile defense, $100 million for counter-unmanned systems, $100 million for subterranean operations, $50 million for emerging technologies, etc. AIPAC is absolutely thrilled. Thanks, Representative Ronnie Jackson and Don Davis, for putting this forward. The Democrat who I just mentioned voted for the NDAA. And,
Presbyterian.
This Republican Party just won an election with Trump running on no new wars, and I'm going to fix the economy. And he started the worst war. He can't get out of it because Iran has won. And now U.S. service members are dying. He's going on Truth Social and saying, like, let's compare the 18 U.S. service member deaths to the... Afghanistan war, to the Vietnam war.
You let Bush have so many deaths.
And then it's so, yeah, exactly. It's so stupid too, because he lists wars and then goes Iran military operation. Like, come on, bro. Yeah. We know what this is. But anyway, here's Trump now saying that the four service members who have died since the resumption of hostilities in this war in Iran, which Israel dragged us into, they actually were in favor of the effort. How he would know this, we don't know. But this is how despicable this guy is. He's literally putting words in the mouths of dead soldiers who just died on behalf of his insane war.
Our heroes, and they are indeed great heroes, actually. They said, and all of them said very strongly, we cannot let Iran have a nuclear weapon. They won't have a nuclear weapon. So we're going to honor them. And one of the hardest things to do, for me, it's one of the hardest things to do as a president, but has to be done.
I'll get over it.
Has to be done.
They said very strongly.
I like when he says that, yeah, right, like, Like, that it's hard for him. What did he just say?
It's hard for, this is one of the hardest things I do, talk about these dead kids. Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway,
what are we doing for
the
for,
ballroom?
Yeah, what's in the menu?
There's
a little bit more here. He gets a little bit more heartfelt here. Just another 20 seconds.
Okay.
All I'm going to say is we love you. We love your child, and that's what they are to them. They're their children. There's no games, no nothing. That's their child. And all you can do is throw out your heart. Thank you. Thank you very
much. That's all they are to them, is that, unlike my daughter, who's both my child and my sexual fantasy.
My muse.
It reminds me of when Connor Roy was trying not to say anything about that pedophile guy.
Right, right, right.
They were children to them, yes. And now they're dead.
Exactly. These were human beings. They had parents, presumably, yeah. And now they're gone. That's his attempt to look a human.
Gotta throw your heart out to them.
Exactly. Yeah. We have a word from one of our sponsors, from Sam, and then we will be back speaking to Austin Coker about the escalation of ICE arrests under Mark Wayne Mullen recently.
Thank you, Emma. You know, I'd like to thank ZocDoc for sponsoring today's episode. ZocDoc has been literally personally helpful for me. You know, I had a longtime doctor in the city. I had a longtime dentist in the city, but I was out of the city. I had a dental emergency. How are you going to find a dentist? Well, I hopped on ZocDoc. It's a totally free app. Go through, look at the reviews, look at the profiles of the doc, in this case, dentists. And who's going to take my insurance? Bingo, bango. Then one click, I've made an appointment. I was able to score an appointment the next morning. And there it is. Emergency crown repair. Look, finding a doctor, making an appointment with a doctor or a dentist or a dermatologist, which you should do on a regular basis. Make sure you don't have any skin cancer, whatever. ZocDoc has something like, I don't know how many specialties. Like 200 different specialties. They've got doctors, over 100,000 doctors across the country. Look, you don't want to be in pain. You don't want to let stuff go. You don't want to have your teeth get worse. ZocDoc makes it super easy to connect with a doctor that you're going to love. ZocDoc's website has tons of reviews from real patients. Like I say, detailed doctor profiles. You can choose the right one. You can see what appointments are available. Appointments generally happen fast, usually within 24 to 72 hours. And sometimes you can even score same-day appointments. Your health matters, and taking care of yourself shouldn't be complicated. Find and book the right doctor with ZocDoc. Head to ZocDoc.com/majority to get started and check that appointment off your to-do list. That's ZocDoc.com/majority. ZocDoc.com/majority. Now, back to the show.
Back.
We are back, and we are joined now by friend of the show, Austin Coker, research assistant professor at Syracuse University. Austin also writes about America's immigration enforcement system on Substack. Austin Coker, you can just find it there with his name. Austin, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back, Emma.
Of course. Happy to have you to talk about, you know, some of the latest ICE data that has been released. As you write, it was revealed that they're currently breaking their ICE, their arrest records. Let's go to the second chart here that shows that. This is from your article on Substack. These are the bookends per day, and you can see how it's at an all-time high right now under the second Trump administration in terms of arrests under Mark Wayne Mullen per day. The highest rate of arrests in June, as you write, was over 1,300. But now with this new July data that was released, it was 1,474 arrests per day, and that's the first 11 days of the month of July. What do you make of this information?
Sure. So the Department of Homeland Security has been touting high arrest numbers all summer. We haven't been able to verify or validate any of that because, unfortunately, the combination of ICE's deep reluctance to be transparent with the American people alongside the Republican recent appropriations bill that was passed along party line votes cut out any of the traditional requirements for basic transparency by the agency. So we've been left wondering whether or not these assertions were true. We received some data earlier this week that shows that this is actually true. They are arresting more people than they have for almost as long as I've been tracking. There were very high arrest numbers during the Obama administration. This graph doesn't go back that far, but I will say that this is certainly the highest arrest number of daily arrests that we've seen in at least a decade. And it does symbolize the fact that, you know, there was such backlash to justifiable backlash to what happened in Minneapolis and the change from Kristi Noem to Mark Wayne Mullen that was supposed to coincide with a less bombastic, less inflammatory approach to policing, immigration policing. Obviously, ICE is still killing people on the streets. There are still people dying in detention. But alongside all of that, there is actually a massive push towards enforcement that looks less like Minneapolis and more like the everyday policing that we've seen for decades.
So they're doing it more quietly, as you say, with less of a kind of fascistic flourish and Stephen Miller frothing at the mouth on television. But Mullen is doing more, hitting quotas more than Noem was with less public backlash. How are they achieving that when you talk about more, you know, traditional immigration policing? What does that look like?
Sure. And, you know, for communities who are affected, I always want to be a little bit, you know, hedge this just a little bit. If you're in a community that's affected, it doesn't feel quiet to you, right? Like it feels like ICE is very much in your neighborhood. But the quietly part really is about is referencing, you know, what happened in Minneapolis was staged. It was a concerted effort to draw headlines and to generate confrontation. It was intentionally about that. And that, as I mentioned, generated backlash. And so ICE is doing what it's done for a long time, which is, you know, frankly, just objectively more effective, is why would you generate that kind of backlash in Minneapolis when, you know, ICE is doing what it's been doing for a long time, just in higher numbers, which is, you know, when people come in to do their check-in, when they actually follow the law and the requirements, they get arrested. This is about ICE making traffic stops one at a time and pulling people over and taking people into custody. It's about ICE taking people into custody from local jails through agreements and partnerships that they have with state and local law enforcement to take people into custody that way. So they're still doing, and again, it's very aggressive. We've seen videos. We have documentation. I just talked with the ACLU about a massive report that they just released a couple days ago that shows widespread abuse of use of force, of, again, you know, justifying people in their vehicles, smashing windows, shooting into vehicles when they claim that someone is directing their car at them, whether or not that's true. So we're still seeing those tactics. We're just seeing it less concentrated in a particular urban area. And that's driving, yeah, again, just record arrest numbers. It's really remarkable to see.
And you mentioned also detention numbers. It's not at an all-time high as of now that we know of. Matt, if you could just pull up this graph, the first one in this article. This is where we're at with the ICE detention population. And I want to talk about this as a way to also discuss deaths in detention, because we know that at least 50 people have died in ICE detention. Again, this is what we know of since the Trump took office. And now it's over 60 deaths when you include the ICE shootings and killings and also, of course, the traffic death in Florida that happened, I guess, last week or 2 weeks ago at this point. Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned the ACLU report about these conditions. What are you hearing about detention and these detention deaths across the country?
Sure. So these detention centers, many of the largest are you know, for-profit facilities, and they have an incentive to spend as little money as possible on care. Diagnosing care, you know, when people come into ICE detention, ICE is, you know, let's remember that ICE is pulling people off the streets. These are, you know, people who, some of whom have chronic medical conditions. They may have disabilities, as we've seen, physical, emotional, psychological disabilities. They may develop medical, you know, worsen medical conditions while they're in detention because of the nature of detention. Or it could be that they have a chronic medical condition that's managed well outside the facility, but once they're inside, as we've seen many times, ICE takes their medication, does not provide them with the medication that they need, and doesn't do really a full diagnosis, and then doesn't really respond when individuals in custody are saying, hey, I have a heart condition, I need my medication, I, you know, I'm diabetic, I'm whatever. ICE and the staff there, the contractors are not responsive. And so what that means is you're just setting up a whole system where people who would be fine under normal conditions face life-threatening circumstances. And it's already cost the lives of 50 people, including most recent victim of ICE custody, which is Jesus Manuel Arena Silva, who died during transport. So we often think about deaths in detention as being in detention facilities, but it could be in ICE custody anytime. So it could be in transferring between facilities. It could be in a temporary hold room, as we saw in Texas. It could even be individuals dying in a hospital facility where they're still in custody, but they're in a hospital for various reasons, and they die there too. So it's really tragic what we're seeing right now.
Yeah, and preventable. Right, of course. That death that you're talking about, in the transfer death, you know, they ignored that his family said, hey, can you bring his medication? Right. And he died within days and was saying to his family that he was not getting the medical care that he needed. And this is what happened. I would imagine at some point efforts for class action lawsuits against these for-profit private prison companies. Are there Absolutely. Rumblings about that?
Sure. I mean, there's lawsuits underway already, and there have been lawsuits against these facilities for decades. In fact, much of what we know about these facilities comes out of lawsuits where, again, very often the lawsuits take so long and the agency and its subcontractors fight so much against transparency and accountability that it makes it hard for remedies to sort of arrive in time for people who are held there now. But we know from lawsuits over the last decades that these facilities have ultimately been found culpable and liable for not providing adequate care and for contributing, exacerbating, or causing the death and medical hardship for people. So yes, absolutely. And the question is just how long will it take to wind through the courts? Under normal circumstances, you know, any sort of responsible agency would want some accountability mechanisms in place so that when things do go wrong, there is a way to address these issues internally without costing taxpayers all the money of having to take lawsuits to court, which it does cost our taxpayer dollars, goes to paying for the attorneys and U.S. attorneys to fight these cases into the Department of Justice. It costs people who are trying to fight these cases time and effort and attorney's fees and all of that. So it's a really expensive endeavor. But again, this is not an agency that's ever loved accountability and oversight by any means, but this administration has certainly completely trashed whatever little bit of accountability and oversight was in place when at the start of the administration.
The other lie that they use to justify their brutality that I think people are beginning to see through, and the data is immensely clear, is that they're just going after criminals. Here we have this another helpful chart from your Substack. This is the share of the detained population in ICE by criminal history. So these aren't raw numbers. These are percentages here on the y-axis. So you can see in 2024, towards the end of Biden's term, you know, that hovers between 60% and 70%. And then there's a huge drop off as Trump's agenda gets underway. And now the convicted criminal share is, I mean, in a close third place, I guess, almost tied with people with pending criminal charges, which, again, is not somebody who's a convicted criminal, and they still should have due process. It's the same as the other immigration violator piece that is now the highest percentage, which essentially means people who are here without documentation, which is a civil offense, and they are being treated, you know, like they are the worst of the worst, with and their rights have entirely been stripped away, and many people are dying in custody because they just don't have proper immigration documentation.
Yeah, that's right. And one thing I have to qualify with this administration is, even within that category of other immigration violator, in the past, it was a little bit more certain that those individuals probably were very likely or did have a removal order or some clear immigration violations. But what we've seen this administration do is arrest people who are in the country lawfully, who entered the country lawfully. So even this other immigration violator, even that category, which I'm using the agency's categories there, of course, and I think your viewers will understand that the criminal legal system itself is by no means perfect, and we don't need to accept, you know, just because someone has a criminal conviction doesn't automatically mean that, you know, I think they should be deported. But the point here is that even within that other immigration violator, it includes a whole swath of people who actually have never even broken the law. They're simply being, you know, detained because of the massive, expansive authority that ICE has to arrest anyone who isn't a citizen and hold them. So it's really concerning. In fact, I'll just add, you know, I was down at Capitol Hill yesterday in D.C., standing next to a 20-year combat veteran from the U.S. Army, whose wife, Arellis, his name is retired Staff Sergeant Wilmer Trujillo. His wife, Arellis, has been held since June 10th. She has no criminal history. She's married to a U.S. citizen who's a 20-year combat veteran, and he's trying to get his wife out so that she can come home while she goes through the normal immigration process. She actually has a pending case. She doesn't need to be detained. And so that's the people that this administration is going after, not the worst of the worst.
God, I remember that case now, and there's just so many of these in the news that we have to keep track of. I commend you, of course, you know, and appreciate your advocacy down in Washington on this. Before we let you go, I wanted to point out this other piece, which I hadn't known about until reading your Substack on this. This there's a chart, if you scroll down a little bit, Matt, with red in it. This is that. That's the one. Okay, so you also are tracking how people are leaving ICE detention. And this new, for the podcast audience, I guess this is, you know, at the end of 2025, you'll see these red bars here. That's court-ordered releases. October 2025 through May 2026 is the data that you've aggregated here. And this is a new category, court-ordered, in terms of how people leave ICE detention. If you could explain what that category is, why it's been added, and additionally just overall information about how people are getting out of these gulags.
Certainly. I mean, still the primary path for people who are in detention to get out is through deportation. ICE is still deporting a higher rate of people out of detention than we've seen in a very long time. So can't sugarcoat that part. But I do think this is really important, and I'm glad you highlighted it, because what it shows is that more than we've seen in a very long time, federal judges, not immigration judges, but real federal judges on the bench, you know, in the federal courts are saying, this detention is unlawful, this detention is unlawful, this detention is unlawful, and ordering ICE to release people because a combination of a groundswell of community support, along with the very concerned attorneys who are saying, look, this agency is holding a lot of people. Not all of those detentions are even lawful under the current law, as broken as it is. And so ICE has been reporting on this. It's possible. I think that the agency is probably doing it because it represents a larger number of cases. I also think they're doing it because, you know, in the interest of the administration, they want to say, look at these activist judges. This is, you know, we're not releasing people because we want to. Activist judges are making us, whatever. But it does show that, you know, that legal activism and, well, it's not even legal activism. That's unfair. Just actually basic due process, just getting a real federal judge to look at a case often has the advantage of say of actually finding that ICE is breaking the law.
And with these deportations, are we still seeing the administration just drop people off in countries that they maybe even have no background in? I mean, there's like sadistic stuff that they're doing, dropping people off on entirely different continents, for example.
Yeah, they sure are. So, you know, this is what we in the biz call third country removals. There's a lot of third country removals still happening. And that just means, you know, if someone can't be deported to the country where they have citizenship or where they were born, the government does have an option or does have a way to just find any other country that will take them and deport them there. It's not always used just when a person can't be deported to their home country. You know, Kilmer Abrego Garcia, for instance, has agreed for months and months to be deported to his home country. And DHS keeps saying, no, we don't want to do that. We want to deport you to a third country, let's say in the middle of Africa, basically as a kind of retaliation and punishment. So, yeah. And so that's absolutely happening. It's very concerning in their projects to track that and push back against that.
Well, I'd encourage everybody, as we always do when you come on, to subscribe to your Substack. Austin Coker, research assistant professor at Syracuse University. Austin is, you know, doing a lot of great work here tracking ICE and making sure that we're up to date, even as the administration tries to obscure all of this. So really appreciate your time today. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Thanks, Emma.
With that, folks, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking to Cori Bush, who is running once again for her former seat in Missouri's 1st Congressional District. We'll be right back after this. We are back, and we are joined now by Cori Bush, former U.S. representative and candidate for Congress in Missouri's 1st Congressional District. Cori, welcome to the show. It's great to see you.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Of course. So, you know, we've just had Jamal Bowman on the show last week, and he was about to get on a plane to head to see you to support your candidacy. And we spoke about your race a little bit because obviously before Thomas Massey was ousted by this deluge of AIPAC money in his primary, your race and Bowman's race were the two most expensive congressional primaries in history. And that was in large part due to AIPAC spending around $9 million in your race. And in total at the time in 2024, there was over $15 million in outside spending. If you could just reflect on the 2024 race and why you chose to kind of just immediately jump back in the fray and have this rematch with the Israel lobby.
You know, 2024 was tough. You know, it was tough on so many levels because, you know, after introducing the Ceasefire Now resolution with my dear sister, Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, people who were our friends, our allies, people who we have been in solidarity with for a long time, a lot of them turned on us, didn't want to talk to us. We even heard from the White House, you know, that we were disgraceful or that our effort was disgraceful and repugnant. And so people just disconnected. And so we felt that on the ground as well. And so the ads just made it even worse. It was, you know, people were believing the ads. People were confused by the ads, especially when you put $15 million into a Midwest media market and you flood the airwaves with it. And it's misinformation, disinformation, lies, distortions that never once mentioned the real agenda. So it was tough. It was the toughest race I had ever been through and probably the toughest one that I had ever seen anybody else that I know go through. But I will say this, it built me up. and it made me ready for this fight that I'm that we're in right now. The one thing it did not do was silence me. It didn't shut me up. It didn't push me into a corner. It didn't make me change my positions. All it did was push me even further into my beliefs. And because what I understand is that this egregious push to get me out of the way really impacted my community, really impacted St. Louis. So someone who knows how to go after the federal dollars for the community, that's willing to sleep on the steps of the Capitol to make sure that people are, that families have homes, you know, someone who is, who will speak out against atrocities and human rights violations, that does not have to poll for moral clarity, somebody that leads from the front and does not have to ask for permission. St. Louis lost that. And that infuriated me. And so I had to jump back out. I jumped back out first because people asked me to. The community, Emma, the community was stopping me at gas stations, at the grocery store, you know, saying, "We need you to run again." A lady jumped out of the car, you know, when she saw me walking down the street and was like, "You're Cori Bush, you gotta run." So it was a community. But then when I got a chance to just really sit back and look at what wasn't happening. You know, a tornado ripped through our community, an EF3 ripped through St. Louis, and it really devastated a community that was already historically excluded and under-resourced. And our congressman, he didn't help enough. He didn't do the work. 1 year later, there has been zero investment from the federal government into this, you know, where money could have been brought into the community that he could have worked for. There has been zero investment.
What do you make of that? Is it just like his, you know, the kind of politician that takes this kind of corporate money is just not somebody who's going to fight in a variety of different ways?
I think it's multiple things. One being that this isn't his work. I've been working on Medicare for All, Green New Deal, livable wage, anti-imperialism, and all of these things, being anti-war, anti-genocide, and just so many of our issues, you know, voting rights, and just all of the things for over a decade. Deeply working in those areas before I ever enter Congress. Yeah. For him, he's just now learning these things as he entered Congress. You know, they had never once spoke about Medicare for All before entering Congress. Had never been to any of our rallies or protests, actions about Medicare for All or any of these other issues that I just spoke about. And so now he's the legislator. So one, he just doesn't have the foundation and the background, but also I don't think he has the human will. One thing about it is I entered the role as an organizer. I'm an organizer. I'm an advocate. And that's what I bring to the table. I have those relationships. I have that background, and he does not. And so, and the other thing is, Emma, I studied Congress before I ever went. I studied the people. I studied legislation. I studied policy. And I wanted to also, I studied people I didn't like, because I wanted to know, how do I not end up them? You know, so I did all of that. And so I don't think that he has that background. So he's just existing. We work for it. Yep. Because who's going to out, you know?
You don't have to fundraise from small dollars. Like, it's just absolutely there for you. It both incentivizes like laziness in terms of how you're serving your constituents, but also itself selects for lazy people who are like willing to hand over their campaign operations, essentially be like, all right, outside spending will do my work for me. I can vacation or do whatever I want. Like, that is part of what draws people like Bell to take that kind of money. And I want to get back to you sleeping on the Capitol steps to over the eviction moratorium, which was like a great moment for you in Congress. And I'll ask about that next. But you mentioned how after you and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib and like that group of just a handful, or maybe it wasn't a handful, how many signed on to the ceasefire resolution initially? It was less than 20, right?
It was less than 20. It was like 13.
13, yeah. So a dozen or so plus. You mentioned that there was a chill then from the rest of the caucus in Congress. Do you sense, have you heard from your former colleagues that that has changed? And if you could just describe what that is like and how you're probably just thinking, I'm standing up against the carpet bombing of children right now, and people are acting like I stink.
Yeah, it was, it was unbelievable. But also hearing from some people who would whisper in my ear and say, I'm with you. I believe the same as you, but I just can't be public about it. So keep going. You know, I would hear that. But I have heard from my former colleagues, from some of them, and it's different. It's so different. You know, we couldn't, like, people didn't even say Palestine when I entered Congress. Like, that wasn't even a thing. We were saying it, but it was not just a, it was not really a thing. And so even that is different. To see the Roe Conn Thomas Massey, you know, amendment, for that to happen, completely a different world. How many people have signed on to Rep. Ramirez Block the Bombs? You know, so much has changed and happened. And people, I think, too, the understanding about like who Palestinians are is even different in Congress. I remember hearing some people say that they just had not really had very many conversations to even understand what was going on and understand the history. And so much of that has changed now. And at the end of the day, we're Democrats. Aren't we supposed to be against human rights violations? Aren't we supposed to be the ones that are speaking up for people's humanity? And aren't we the party of civil rights? Like, so that should be the lowest bar.
Right. Right. And what I think that those colleagues who didn't sign on don't understand is that people don't believe you if that is not universally applied, and they think it may not apply to them when they vote for them. You know, and I mentioned how it wasn't just AIPAC that spent in that race against you on behalf of your opponent, Wesley Bell. There was $15 million in total outside spending. AIPAC was $9 million of that. But you talked about how you slept on the Capitol steps to combat the eviction moratorium. With housing being so central right now to people's, I think, you know, frustration with our political system, how expensive it is for rent, it just continues to climb, and the percentage of people's income that's getting chewed up by rent continues to climb. It's at an all-time high. Like, what do you make of that moment when the eviction moratorium expired and how that coincided with this housing crisis? Like, how do you reflect on that time in Congress, and what would you do in the future if you were to get reelected?
Thinking about, had I not been in the seat, and if the current congressman was in the seat at that time, what would he have done? He would not have camped out on the steps of the Capitol. There would have been an end to the eviction moratorium. 11 million people would have immediately been at risk for evictions. Many of those folks would have ended up on the street. 7,000 people would have been impacted in our district alone, which means we would not be at a place right now where those people would have been able to find permanent housing. So the housing crisis, the housing crisis would have just been, the unhoused crisis would have just gotten just in a place that where I don't think we would be able to recover probably for a decade or two. I just don't believe that the will, the priority, the value is there from some of our friends. And also, when we're talking about whole families, you know, it's one thing when you're an individual and you become unhoused. It's another thing when you're a family. And we have not fixed the housing crisis. We have not fixed the unhoused crisis already, and to put all of those people at risk. So what I would do differently. So one, when I reflect on it, that's the thing. It's right. What would it look like now had I not been there? Two, right now, what we're looking at in my district is we still have people who are unhoused a year after the tornado, and people who are sleeping in tents and going from hotel to hotel. Some people who just get to stare at the bricks that were once their homes. and they don't have help. They don't have true help coming, especially from the federal government. But they do get to see their congressmen take lavish trips to Israel. They do get to see their congressmen go and have dinners at restaurants and kiki it. You know, they get to see that. What I would be doing is, first of all, I would have brought the investment before now. What we cannot do is say, well, somebody told me no. Or it's hard to get funding because of who is in the White House. So it's so hard. So let's just wait until Democrats take control again one day. So all of you people, all of you, my constituents, you know, wait. That's what we're saying. Sleep in the tents because it's uncomfortable for me to work for you. That's what we're seeing from him right now. I wouldn't be doing that. I would have been on the ground the same way that I was with the 2022 floods we had locally, where people were displaced. I would have been on the ground with the people. I would have been knocking on the city, the state, the county, federal doors, looking at buckets, seeing where we bring the money home. And like I did with the flood, I brought $82 million and then another $27 million for our Metro Rails. That's what I would have been doing. The thing is this, no is just a word. It's a word. It's a barrier until you get to the word yes.
Yeah, right. Keep pushing. I also, I mean, I don't really have a question on this, but I did want to remind people that you were one of the people that, or you were spearheading the effort to remove the January Sixers from Congress as well. So you're also not a shrinking violet. That's not a reference to the color of your shirt. You're not a shrinking violet when it comes to those damn Republican insurrectionists as well in Congress. But, you know, I'm curious about how you think about how Democrats are now acknowledging that affordability is the agenda item or the buzzword that they need to kind of emphasize. Because you were one of the few, you know, working class representatives that came into Congress during that period. And it feels like there's a lot of Democrats that want to say the word affordability, but they don't want to touch anything like that Zohran had been doing, for example, that made affordability the new thing that, you know, Schumer and Jeffries say they should be how Democrats kind of brand themselves. What do you think about like what affordability really means and what Democrats should be pushing?
Well, first, you can't really talk about affordability when your campaign coffers say, "I'm working to, you know, I'm the money in here makes your life more expensive," you know, as a Democrat. When we continue to take money from big pharma, from war profiteers, we're taking money from the chemical industry, you know, how are you able to, you know, it's hypocritical. So when we look at we just look at Congress, but it's on the state level as well. How do we get to a place where the people actually respect our members of Congress and our other legislators if we are taking money from both sides? Affordability means that you make my life less expensive. It means that you work to lower utility costs, because we know that across our communities that every single year that it's getting hotter in the summer, but our energy costs are going up. We know that that climate change is actually real. And so we're seeing more disasters. We're seeing, and we know that the investment is not there. So what do we do on the front end to make sure that people have what they need? Is there funding to make sure that people are able to get their roofs, you know, taken care of, to make sure that they can have that they can have those repaired every 10 years or whatever it is, so that they can, you know, so that they can not have their roof fall in, you know, during a disaster? Is there, you know, we lower gas prices. Can we not send money to war? Can we not spend our money, you know, bombing other countries? Can we keep the money here and lower gas costs and lower groceries? When, if we would have gotten a Build Back Better, a Better Act, Emma, and I always go back to this, and I know that I am preaching to the congregation with you on this, but had we got the Build Back Better Act, I truly feel people would not have been voting for Donald Trump over the price of eggs. So when we talk about affordability and how we lower prices, you have to look at what the regular everyday person in our communities, what they need. They need childcare. Childcare is bananas. Build Back Better Act would have taking care of childcare costs, you know, for our two through five year olds, first time in 100 years. So that is, when we talk about affordability, you can't say that I care about, you know, I care about what's happening in your home. You can't say I want you to have health care and I want to lower those costs, but you're funded by the healthcare industry. You're funded by these energy companies. So that's true affordability, but that's why they can't talk about it properly.
Right. And it's not gonna work if they just say the word. I'm telling you now. I mean, there needs to be substance behind it. Lastly, you mentioned your work as an organizer, and you have the DSA endorsement in St. Louis. And what does that mean to you? Because I think we're seeing across the country with, I mean, of course in New York, but even in Denver, how DSA really does give certain candidates an advantage when there's so much money on the other side because of organizing, because DSA has people that are committing their time to the organization and then thus to campaigns like yours. As an organizer, what advantages do you see for having DSA in your corner, in addition to just, of course, you know, ideologically aligning with the agenda of democratic socialism?
Well, DSA and I have been together for a long time. And one thing about them, and I'll start first talking about St. Louis DSA, amazing organizers, absolutely amazing. You don't have to tell them how to put together a field plan, like a field plan. You don't have to tell them how to organize around the campaign. They not only know how to do it, they make a point to say, we got this. You organize your campaign. We have our own campaign for you that we're going to put together. They tell you when to show up. This is what we're doing. If you can show up, please do. You know, they run their own campaign for their candidates in a way that says we're prioritizing you in the way that we're here for what you need, but we're not going to burden you with what we think you need. And so that has been so tremendous. They've been knocking doors for months. Like, they started knocking doors when it was cold in St. Louis. It's the Midwest. It was cold, you know, but they were knocking doors then. And they have, you know, not only knocking doors, but making calls and raising money. They have, they spearhead organizing for candidates. And that is what is so important. They know how to stand up their own campaigns. What it has meant, though, also is because we share so many of the same values, because they believe, I don't have to worry about when they're knocking doors and, you know, them saying something or them believing something that is so like far off. What they believe is in humanity. What they believe is every single person deserves to have dignity and humanity. What they, you know, they believe that every worker deserves a fair wage. They believe in abolishing ICE. They believe, you know, and so like we share that. So they, and the other thing is, I don't, sometimes when people help you, you have to teach them about your values. You have to help them to understand like the foundation of why I believe this and what it really means, even if they don't agree. You don't have to do that with DSA. They're telling you too. They're like, hey, you know, like, can we talk about this too? And you're like, yes, all of the things. And so that's what they bring. They bring all of the things to the table. So shout out to St. Louis DSA. Shout out to National DSA. Like, let's get this win.
Yeah, I mean, here. We're rooting for you, Corey. I mean, it was an absolute travesty for democracy that there was that money cannon that was, you know, fired at your race in 2024. But people are waking up to AIPAC and to what this kind of outside spending really means about these candidates. So I really appreciate your time today, Corey Bush. Early voting has already started in Missouri, but August 4th, right? That's election day, August 4th?
Yes.
That's a big one. That's Michigan as well with Abdullah al-Sayed. So we'll be, of course, covering your race and watching it with close attention. Where can people support your campaign and what do you need most in these critical final less than 2 weeks?
We really need, first of all, donations. If people could please donate, because one thing that we're seeing is, oh, it's the Democratic district. We don't need to donate. Or we love Corey, you know, but, you know, AIPAC, you know, We need help. So help us to get on television, you know, to keep these ads going, television, internet, radio. Please donate. I just turned 50 2 days ago, you know, so send a birthday contribution.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. I'm looking at 35.
I would not have guessed it. I'm not just sucking up to you. I would not have guessed that.
Yes. Well, please donate. Also, you can join up with us and help us to make phone calls. If you're willing to come to St. Louis, we'll find supporter housing. Like we just need people's help. So please let your people know to vote for Cori Bush August 4th if you are in St. Louis in the first district. And you can go to coribush.org for all of the info and to donate.
CoriBush.org, and we will put a donation link down below in the video and episode descriptions, wherever people are listening to or watching this. Cori Bush, thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it, and happy birthday.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Did she say it was today? Her birthday? 2 days ago. Gotcha. Okay, gotcha. Because I will say, this is my little shout out. Happy birthday to my sister. Happy birthday to my sister. So I don't need to say how old she is, but it's her birthday today. So love you, and happy birthday to you.
That is grandma.
Exactly. You're old, girl. Not as old as me, unfortunately, and that's never going to change.
That is grandma.
Matt, what's happening on Left Reckoning with the Jacobin Show?
Actually, a little programming note for St. Louis folks that checked in on this interview. We had The Veil Prophet, Secret Societies, White Supremacy, and the Struggle for St. Louis by Devin Thomas O'Shea, an exceptional book. We talked about it on Left Reckoning with Devin a couple weeks ago. And next week on this program, Sam will be talking to Devin O'Shea in a pre-recorded interview. But look forward to that. We did Left Reckoning this weekend. We'll have a Sunday show for our supporters, our lovely supporters, patreon.com/leftreckoning, the people who keep David and I in business.
Yes, thank you guys for supporting Left Reckoning. And if you would also like to support this show, join themajorityreport.com. Hey, like the stream. How about that? Like the stream. We haven't done that in a while. Go Bills. Like the stream. Show us some love here on YouTube and join themajorityreport.com if you can. It helps us stay resilient.
I think it's good.
We covered, hopefully we outlast MS Now, for example.
Yeah, as Sam would say, give us 5 stars on iTunes.
Yes, right.
Yeah, go on Winamp too. LimeWire.
We're also available for rent at Blockbuster if you want to see those full episodes.
That is not Kentucky Fried French Fry.
Man of the people, join themajorityreport.com. Brandon, hello.
Hello. Hello.
Hello. What is happening on the discourse?
Well, we have been checking in, I jinked this yesterday, and so the clip should be up, with the health of Mitch McConnell, who has been missing for almost 40 days now. He's taken off work for a late Lent. I didn't know he was Catholic, but I suppose that this is just his way of coming out as Catholic. And so along with that and the cursed Charlie statue that they're going to be unveiling in Times Square in the September 10th, I mean, we've been keeping busy.
Have you heard the new weapon theory about what exactly it was that killed Charlie, Brandon?
When you say new weapon theory, you have to really, really specify, because I've heard a lot of weapon theories.
Is and it's tied to the Israeli pager stuff.
Okay,
that his actually lapel mic was an explosive device.
That's not new. That's not a new theory.
Yeah.
That's a classic theory about it. And I've heard that before. I've also heard like synchronized shooters, like there was a second shooter in the crowd. I've heard that actually it was like the stool that shot him. I personally think that if you're going to come up with, I just think that those things make the conspiracies seem less realistic, because it's just really easy to shoot someone in America, like as we've seen so much. And so there's no reason to do it that way. Especially like
to have an exploding mic or stool that shoots you up the ass. Like, what are we talking about here?
Well, I mean, even if you want to compare it to the It's not, though, right? Because if you want to compare it to the Israeli pager attack, that was a terrorist attack meant to sow terror in the Lebanese people and Hezbollah, and Israel took responsibility for that. You can't take a responsibility for a terror attack. You can't scare people or have your political message be known if you don't take responsibility for this, like, terror attack in this case. Because the only reason we know that it's supposed to be because Israel did it is because Candace came out afterwards and said it. Like, if she hadn't done that, people wouldn't have known that it was supposed to be, like, Israel teaching us not to, like, distance themselves. Like, I'm just saying, it doesn't really make sense to me personally why they would do it that way versus any other way, because it doesn't really send the same message that the pager attack did.
Right. Israel would be doing it for propaganda value.
I'm hung up on the stool shooting him. Now, that's not an explosive stool. Is it like one of the legs is like a rifle?
The leg has opposable thumbs.
I have to imagine it's not like being driven by some kind of explosive device. I have to imagine it's like some kind of pneumatic thing. Like it uses like air, like compressed air to shoot out because there's no bullet fragment in their imagination, in some of their imaginations. I'm not a believer in any of this stuff. I'm going to put that out there. I've been much more enchanted.
That's good to know.
With holographic Charlie theory. Like you guys know holographic Charlie theory? That's the one where Charlie is with a hologram that day. And so nothing happened to him.
And he's like living with Tupac somewhere.
Is it a holographic blood all over the pavement too?
Oh.
Well, I mean, they can do a lot of really crazy things with holograms now. One in every three people you pass on the street is a hologram now, and you don't even notice.
I think I found a diagram of the assassination plot. If you could put this up here. This is from the Wikipedia for Rube Goldberg machines.
Gotcha.
Anyway. Yeah.
And how they must have gotten some Rube to trigger it leaving a trail of M&Ms like for ET, and then the box closes and then all of that goes into effect, and that's how Charlie died. That makes more sense to me than the stool theory.
Well, not to change topics back to the first thing I said, but like, do you guys know what's going on with Mitch McConnell? Because I am actually like quite.
Well, let's
taken
save this for
the
fun half and introduce Binder, who has been patiently waiting to weigh in. But your mic,
you're muted.
You might have even tried to weigh in, and we weren't able to hear you. Is it working now?
He's gonna refresh. Did we get all the plugs in, Brandon? Did you plug?
Oh wait, well yeah.
Did
so,
you plug
like,
the
you
discourse,
should,
or did we just talk you should, about that?
Charlie, for, we, just talked, yeah. we just talked about the discourse. You should definitely go over. We are actually only 500 people now, basically from 25,000 subscribers over on the discourse. So I think that you should go over to the discourse with Brandon on YouTube or with Twitch and sign up today. We're actually only like 50 people away from 9,000 on Twitch, which is, I mean, pretty good in my opinion. So definitely be in on the ground floor, because then in the future, when people are like, wow, do you watch the discourse? You can go like, I've been watching the discourse since before you even heard of it. You can go like full hipster on them. You can be like, I was being enlightened by Brandon while you were still like in the dark ages of your life.
Well, this is where you need to get merch, so that merch can be sold to the initial members, and it'd be a limited edition, and then they'll be able to have like a physical piece of evidence for how much cooler they are than the other fans.
I will say people also, that's a good idea, and I will maybe look into that, but people also say they like my thumbnails. So even if you don't like my videos, you can go over to my channel and look at all of the thumbnails that I create.
It's a visual feast. We have Binder back, I believe. He's joining in just a second, then we'll head into the fun half. No, it's all right. Teacher Ryan says, guns don't kill people. Amish making oak stools kill people.
It's true.
Oh,
he and I should say.
Again.
Okay. Well, check out Leftist Mafia tonight. Yeah.
Definitely do. We've also been keeping up with the downward spiral of Russell Brand. So if you're into that too, definitely check it out.
Oh, interesting. I do need to catch up on that.
Yes. We'll check that. Everybody check that out, folks. Okay. We will check out Leftist Mafia tonight and Mapinder's other work. We will see you in the fun half.
Okay, Emma, please.
Well, I feel that my voice is sorely lacking on the Majority Report.
Wait, whoa. Look, Sam is unpopular.
I do deserve a vacation at Disney World. So, ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to welcome Emma to the show.
It is Thursday.
Yeah, I think you need to take over for Sam.
Yes, please.
Sir, I'm gonna pause you right there.
Wait, what?
You can't encourage Emma to live like this. And I'll tell you why.
was offered a tour, sushi, and poker with the boys. Tour, sushi, and poker with the boys. Was offered a tour, sushi, and poker with the boys.
What?
Tour, sushi, and poker.
Tim's upset.
Tour, sushi, and poker with the boys. Was offered a tour, sushi, and
that's what we call biz.
Tour, sushi, and poker with the boys.
Right.
Tour, sushi, and poker.
We're gonna get demonetized.
I just think that what you did to Tim Pool was mean.
Free speech.
That's not what we're about here. Look at how sad he's become now. You shouldn't even talk about it. I think you're responsible.
I probably am in a certain way, but let's get to the meltdown here.
Tour, sushi, and poker with the boys.
Oh my god.
Tour,
wow.
Sushi.
I'm sorry, I'm losing my fucking mind.
Someone's offered a tour, sushi, and poker with the boys.
Logic.
Tour, sushi, and poker with the boys. Boy.
Tour, I think I'm like a little kid.
Had this debate 7,000 times.
Just don't understand.
So I'm not trying to be a dick right now, but like, I absolutely think the U.S. should be providing meat with a wife and kids.
That's not what we're talking about here. Okay, all right.
It's not a fun job. Twerk?
That's a real thing. That's real thing. Real thing.
Boys. Willy Wonka.
Twerk? That's a real thing. That's real thing. Real thing.
What's that? Offered a twerk?
That's a real thing. That's real thing. Real thing.
Boys. That's
a twerk?
A real thing.
That's real thing. Real thing.
Boys. That offered a twerk?
Ladies and gentlemen, Joe Rogan has done it again.
That offered a twerk?
That's a real thing.
That's poker with the boys.
I think he might be blowing it out of proportion.
Real thing.
That's poker with the boys.
That offered a twerk?
That's a real thing.
That's poker.
Let's go, Joe.
What's going on? Live YouTube.
Sam has like the weight of the world on his shoulders.
Poggers.
Sam doesn't want to do this show anymore.
Can't do it anymore.
It was so much easier when the Majority Report was just you. You were happy.
Let's change the subject.
Right. Rangers and Knicks are doing great.
Now shut up. Don't want people saying reckless things on your program.
That's
now,
one of the most difficult parts about this show.
This is the pro-killing podcast.
I'm thinking maybe it's time we bury the hatchet.
Left is best. Trump. Violet.
Twerk.
Don't be foolish and don't fucking tweet at me and don't bitch. The way Emma has cucked all of these people.
Love it.
That's where my heart is, so yeah. I wrote my honors thesis about it.
Oh, sorry. She wrote an honors thesis. Yeah. I guess I should hand the main mic to you now.
You are to the right of the on foreign policy.
We already fund Israel, dude. Are you against that?
That's a tougher question. I don't have an answer to.
Incredible theme song.
I Bumbler.
Emma Viglin, absolutely one of my favorite people. Actually, not just in the game, like period.
We are back. It is the fun half of the Majority Report, and we do have Matt Binder with us now. Matt, how you doing? What's happening on Leftist Mafia and others?
Hey,
things.
Yeah, no, just youtube.com/Matt Binder. Tune in tonight, 8:30 p.m. Eastern time, and you'll catch your Matt Binder fill for the week.
Okay, all right. Cheese says Brandon's thumbnails are the best in the game.
Are they?
I don't agree, but I like I to express myself sometimes. They're millennial cringe, in my opinion, but you know, that's just me.
Hologram from Jamaica says, I am glad Brandon brought up stool shooter theory. Gulf Coast Grit, there's so many wild ideas on the Charlie Kirk assassination. The only really conspiratorial thing you can point to is the fact that the weapon they say killed him isn't feasible for the amount of damage seen on camera.
I don't know that I even buy that. Like, a rifle at a distance far enough will blow a big hole in somebody. Like, I don't know.
Right.
Also, I mean, I think people are in disagreement on that.
In the throat.
Exactly. I think ballistics experts are in disagreement about that, because it's easy to say that from like the standard load that you think would go into that rifle, but exactly. Like not knowing the specifics of the bullet are just like, you know, there are too many what ifs in that case. So you just kind of have to concede that without anything else suspicious going on besides like the way Erica acts, it's not, you know, enough to concede that there was a lavalier mic explosive.
Yeah.
It's like with the Kennedy assassination, like this sort of people like to not investigate any of like the personnel connections and the like deep state connections, like and like to try to figure it out all with ballistics or forensic evidence of like recordings and stuff like that. And it would be nice if that was definitive, but I've heard so many ballistic experts, people like, I've been doing this for 30 years, I've been around guns, blah 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 blah, and they come to completely different conclusions. Like it's not as scientific as people report it to be.
I tried to ask you before, Brandon, but my mic wasn't working, which I have to assume that it was because the deep state didn't want me to ask you. But what for those who believe in the hologram Charlie Kirk theory, what do they think? Where do they think the real Charlie Kirk is, and why is he? Yeah, why?
Well, he hasn't reappeared yet, at least as far as I know. I think what they think happened. So, like, for holographic Charlie theory to work, you have to accept that the technology to create realistic 3D holograms of people that are indistinguishable from reality are and can be like projected essentially into space, like a Green Lantern hard light projection exists, right? You know, forget what you've seen with Tupac in the hologram concerts. It's way more advanced than that. And then they had Charlie there, but they swapped him out with some kind of stage magic. And so there was in some of the photos, like a trap door. So I will say this is not a well-trafficked in conspiracy theory. It was a trap door. They magicked him out at some point by replacing him with a hard light construct. And now he's just gone. But I don't think that he within that theory has reappeared yet. He could be any number of places, right? Like, I don't know where he is said to be, but I don't think they've gotten that far.
I mean, the old hard light construct, right?
Yeah, he's not like in Paris with Anne Hathaway for Michael Caine to see at the end of the movie. You know what I mean? maybe he was like disposed of in some other way. I don't know. Like, but there's a video on it that you can watch. I can send it to you.
Yeah, please do. Matt from Minnesota, just remembering how in freshman year of high school we took a trip to DC and the tour guide spent the whole ride from Gettysburg to the city telling us JFK conspiracies as if they were factual as the battlefield.
He sounds awesome.
Yeah, I like that guy. June Oliver, Nick Shirley should investigate the Mitch McConnell situation. Oh, yeah. I sent this in Slack. This is just like a sound so we can talk about this. Mitch McConnell is still MIA. It's absurd at this point. They sent out a proof of life photo that doesn't prove very much. They subtly attempt to put a current newspaper in the frame to show that this is actually something that happened and was taken recently.
Like what? This is what you do when you're holding someone hostage.
Yes.
Right.
I
was going to say they clearly just used that picture that Sam and Emma took together to show that Sam is still alive, and yes. They swapped their faces on Emma and Sam.
Yes, they're gonna. We've referenced this too many times. We're gonna have to show it. I gotta just give credit to whoever did this on Twitter. I'm gonna find their name. I sent the photo, but this is we posted this on our Instagram as well, and people seem to really, really get a kick out of it. At Monolith Black on Twitter, this is the one use of AI that I can get behind. This is the proof of life for Sam, who, that's like an actual, I think, photo of me or approximating one, and I'm not sure who that is, but it's just like Sam's hair.
I have no idea who that's supposed totally to be.
Sam is obviously very ill. He's not doing well. He doesn't even look like himself anymore.
And Noah, by the way, in this photo, newspaper. Interesting. Unlike the McConnell one.
The newspaper in the photograph is a thing you do when you're holding someone hostage and you want to prove to the people you're trying to extort that they're still alive.
Yes. Yeah.
I also just want to point out that, like, them hyper focusing on whether or not he's still alive is kind of a red herring, because even being alive still, A, doesn't mean that he's not brain dead, obviously, and B, does not mean that he's capable of doing the job of a senator, right? And so just proving that you have the ability to prop up his body and have it be the eyes wide and, you know, at least yeah. seeming to be alive does not really satisfy people's concerns. It's just the lowest level, and I think that's something to consider. It's like they had to be pushed to provide this photo, and it doesn't even meet the requirements. So no. Why can't they do a single thing better than that? Like, because it's not as though they did this willingly. It wasn't until they were like actively like hunted down for almost a month, because this came out on the 12th of July, so only 11 days ago, and we haven't heard anything since then, obviously. But so, like, I mean, it's just questionable why they couldn't do something better than this if it took all that time to work up to this anyway, if he's just fine.
Well, he can't talk. That's probably why. I mean, video evidence yeah. would have been better than this, but here's the problem. We are like, the more that they buy time and there isn't pressure being put on it, the more that like this is a problem, because there should be a special election that's being triggered right now. But Kentucky law says that you can't hold a special election 3 months out from an already scheduled election, which would be the midterms in November. So once it hits that date, it forecloses any opportunity to replace Mitch McConnell in a special election, and that's what they're trying to avoid. So they'd rather have this husk of a human being who's barely, you know, who can't, and I would have called him that before his health episode, by the way, given, you know, how many people's health care he stripped away and the tax cuts for the rich that have immiserated this country and
he's
the illegal wars that he's supported. Like, But they're going to prop this guy up because there's more invested in Mitch McConnell, the corporation, essentially, or the entity that does the bidding of the corporations that donate to the infrastructure of his campaign. Like, they're going to stick with these people no matter how old they are, Dianne Feinstein, Mitch McConnell, whatever, let them die in office, because they're basically investment properties for the corrupting corporate interests that decide our politics for the most part, unless you have great candidates that don't take corporate money and or have success against that machine. But McConnell, they want him to hang in there so that they can't trigger a special election. I liked seeing this morning from AOC. This is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez being asked about this issue and saying that he needs to resign if there's no update that's available.
Or just do another update. If he can't give us an update, he should resign. Absolutely. In addition to the one he sent out about a week and a half ago.
I think it's been very clear to people across Kentucky that his update was not sufficient.
Update, and, in quotes.
You know, I don't know if he has a conversation with a journalist. I don't know if he has a conversation with the governor. I don't know what his staff are doing.
That's the conversation.
We have a responsibility to the American people. We're seeing increasingly these votes are being decided by a one or two vote margin. And if you're not capable of, not only not capable of doing the job presently, but we need to know if you're capable of doing the job for the foreseeable future. And that, I think, is tremendously important.
But let's just take, Scott Jennings's word, the guy that works for Salem Media, which the Wall Street Journal just
had a great conversation with him.
Doing influence operations on behalf of the Israeli government. Go ahead.
Well, I will just say two things. The first is that this is not the first time that Mitch McConnell has just tried to run out the clock to get his way. We know that was the strategy with Obama's Supreme Court picks as well. So
yes.
It's well within the Mitch McConnell playlist to do stuff like this. And second, I do find it strange, and maybe it's just because I've missed it, but before the proof of life was, you know, put out there, everyone was having these 20-minute calls with Mitch McConnell. But since the proof of life has been put out there, you haven't heard as many of those stories, right? It's like, oh, well, once we put the proof of life out there, suddenly the 20-minute calls all just like stopped immediately. There was no need for that level of narrative to be out there.
Scott Jennings said that, then was pressed on it. In I think it was Casey Hunt. We played that clip, and he said, he said, like, oh, you know, he didn't answer the question about, like, can you call him right now? Because I think he realized he went too far as, like, a paid Republican liar. We know you didn't have a 20-minute conversation about the situation in Maine and the Graham Plattner dropout situation, which is what Scott Jennings was claiming. Like, the guy, they can't even get a video of him to quell these fears, saying a sentence. You think that he's able to hold this conversation? And I think Jennings was like, especially because Republicans are pissed about this too. There's conspiracy theories about Mitch McConnell in the online GOP media right now. So Jennings was like, oh, this does not look good for me. And a reminder that Trump doesn't even like Mitch McConnell. So the whole MAGA cult thinks he's a rhino, which is hilarious because he's the most effective Republican politician in my lifetime, in a bad way. But, like, that's where Jennings realized, okay, I know I'm supposed to lie on behalf of the conservative agenda, but this is might actually hurt my future job prospects.
Right. I'm a shameless, like, nematode, but to the extent I need to continue having some semblance of credibility that isn't just completely blown up by the fact it coming out that this guy's been brain dead for like months now.
Oh, and that's the other thing I want to point out. In Kentucky law, if you're brain dead, that also that like legally also would trigger that you're considered basically dead as a lawmaker under that law.
Well, I think they give up the game when they tell you that he can't speak to you without revealing his personal health information, because that's what they say. If you say, well, why can't we call him right now, or why can't he call in, or why can't he produce a video? They say like that violates HIPAA. Like, no, he can't speak to you at all. But I mean, I'm being paraphrasing there, but they insinuate that he can't speak to you at all without, essentially giving up what's wrong with him. But that shouldn't be the case if it's nothing major. Like, if he's fine and he hasn't had a stroke, or he's not brain dead, or he can, like, you know, he's not nonverbal from some other issue, he should be able to talk to you without having to give you his prognosis. That doesn't really make any sense, because ultimately he's not running again. So I think that they, you know, they're basically admitting that he's not able to have a conversation at all without revealing that he's not okay.
Well, the good news is that in the Constitution does, you know, ensure the right to some level of representative democracy, but they have a footnote in it that HIPAA overrides that in every single instance. If there is some sort of health issue from your elected representatives, they don't have to answer to you. It's about their medical privacy over the representation of millions and millions of people whose lives are impacted by the decisions that he makes on a day-to-day basis.
He's getting a BBL.
So is Sam, but that's not, we're not allowed to say that.
Too late.
Sam and McConnell are getting couples bidets. I mean, bidets. Damn it. BBLs. I thought about
getting
bidets, unfortunately, when Sam came to mind. I wasn't. No, I know. It's burned into my memory. Couples BBLs holding hands the whole time. Eli from Jersey, I recently had a 20-minute conversation about the Maine water bottle throwing situation with McConnell. have you guys heard this?
No.
Okay, so the new tactic is that Troy Jackson,
women are scary,
is scary. Now in Maine, women are really afraid of Troy Jackson because he once, in a heated debate in the state Senate, over Troy Jackson wanting to lower people's prescription drug prices, he threw a plastic water bottle in the direction of a woman.
Inadvertently in the direction of a woman.
You know, and this is the kind of behavior that is so troubling. Wait, that obviously we shouldn't question if this is just being elevated because he wants to cut military aid to Israel and tax billionaires.
Now, Jackson allies claim that it's not the same thing as what Plattner's accused of.
So. Well, let's not go too far. Sorry, Bender, go.
I was going to say, you mean he didn't grab a water bottle and say, point me in the direction of a woman?
Yeah, right. I want to peg a woman. That's all I have on the brain.
I mean,
is there video of this? I don't support tossing things at people. I don't support Klobucharing.
I was gonna say, isn't that the same thing we've heard Amy Klobuchar has done? I mean, Listen, I don't, know the situation.
It's actually more of a pattern, probably, with her throwing things and yeah, right.
Also, if you're getting like heated in a policy debate, I don't think that's anywhere near the same. Even if you throw a water bottle, I don't think it's anywhere near the same as if like you're getting mad at a staffer over like a job related like a request.
I agree.
And you throw a water bottle. Like it's those are even those two things are completely different.
It's almost like the news organization should spend their time doing reporting on actual issues instead of dumbass horseshit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like if you threw a water bottle because like he asked a staffer to do something and they didn't, I would say that's a concerning sort of a little tidbit. But if he's throwing it because he's arguing over policy and he gets, you know, very passionate about it, that's it's a positive in my book.
I agree.
I think you should throw a water bottle at Susan Collins.
Open the debate that way. Women.
This just reminds me of how like Mark Wayne Mullen was just like grilled by Rand Paul about like his supporting like violence in the Senate and like Rand Paul getting almost beat to death by his neighbor. And he was just like, yeah, I can't take that back.
Mark Wayne Mullen and Sean O'Brien almost got into a fist fight on the Senate floor. And Mark Wayne just got a freaking promotion to lead the Gestapo organization. On this topic, this
Emma will like this clip.
I almost put it in the sound sheet, and I was like, I don't even know what to say about this. Okay, here's a Democrat saying that she doesn't know, or indicating she doesn't know if she's going to support Abdullah Sayed if he wins the nomination in Michigan.
Will you not support him?
You know, Jake, I think that it's really important to make a clear distance from yourself and these comments. And that's exactly what I've been doing, you know, in this race. You know, I will not even come close to being associated with comments like America deserved September 11.
Oh, will you not support
him? You know, so that is Hassan again is making an appearance, guilt by association, because Hassan said something in an edgy way that was actually correct in its analysis, which is that 9/11, like October 7th, was blowback for policy that we have done, a murderous policy in the Middle East for 9/11, October 7th, obviously the apartheid and ethnic cleansing of the Palestinians.
And guess what? The voters understand this sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. Even in New York City, the place where this shit happened.
Also, even if they don't understand that entirely correct statement, it's also like people are not feeling 9/11 like they used to. And part of that is because it's already been like memeified, not even by the left and the edgy people online. It was memeified by like our culture, by the Republicans and Democrats, like traipsing about with like the memory of 9/11 to like do every single thing they want to do wrong. Like people do not really like feel 9/11 like this. It is not 9/12/2001 anymore. People are like, oh, 9/11, like, who, so what? There's 20,000 9/11s every day. You know?
So like, I really do want to emphasize that the uncommitted movement in 2024, that was a group of Democratic voters who were concerned that we were funding and arming a genocidal government. And they said, hey, we're going to withhold our vote as a method to pressure you to stop committing genocide against the Palestinian people. That's what that uncommitted movement was.
I mean, the
2026 uncommitted for this side of the aisle is the Democrats, these corporate Democrats, being mad that he associated with one of the most popular streamers in the country. And I guess in Texas, it's were people mean to me on Instagram.
Right. There's no policy fight here. Like if they were requesting that a candidate, take up one of their policy proposals that they've rallied around, and that's the reason why they supported the candidate who dropped out or lost or whatever, then that's one thing. And that's, you know, you could disagree, but that's an understandable tactic. This is just like, this is drama. This is YouTube drama. Like this is the equivalent.
This is a lady who doesn't care if Republicans win.
Yeah.
They're fighting over nothing. Do you, at the end of the day, do you believe in anything? Because if you do, you'll want to support the Democrat that can take back a Senate seat or hold the Senate seat, whichever situation you're talking about, and deny Republicans that seat. But that's not what it's about for a lot of these Democratic establishment type politicians.
Yeah, this is about them and her sense of purity over something that, like, she either purposely misunderstands or cynically is misrepresenting. Whereas the uncommitted movement was, hey, you're going to blow this fucking election if you try to do a genocide, because that's what happened. Is, I mean, I've said this over and over again. The amount of people I heard that run in Democratic politics at the state level, when Biden stepped down and Harris took over, the palpable sense of relief that they no longer had to defend what Biden was doing in Gaza, and they could get a fresh relief in the volunteers, people that actually do the work for this party, could go to doors and not have to, for a little bit, until Harris fucked that up too, for a little bit, not have to defend the genocide in Gaza and say, actually, we're concerned about affordability and healthcare. That was when Harris went up in the polls. And then she was convinced by people who should be in front of the Hague that she shouldn't do that anymore. And all of a sudden that demoralization crept back in.
Yeah. I mean, if a leftist was doing and acting the way Jasmine Crockett is acting right now in Texas, who, I mean, I don't know what influence she has over the voters, and we'll see. But we are in a 5-alarm fire about having to curb the accelerated fascism under Donald Trump. We need to take back the Senate. These are the people that were saying that the left doesn't care about winning elections and the left needs to get on board with vote blue no matter who. But you have people who are like as true blue Democrats as ever, who are essentially saying that they're not going to support James Tallarico for reasons that are as vague as anything I've ever heard, just like a general frustration with his lack of outreach to
he was disrespectful to Colin Allred.
Okay, great. I mean, okay, well, if it's not Crockett
privately,
Crockett's public about this, but let's lay the blame at Colin Allred's feet, maybe even more so, because he's bitter about this. Like, this is rotten and scary and cynical, and it's really wrong. We need to be all united right now behind whoever ends up being these nominees, and Tallarico's the nominee in Texas, because this, like, there are actually lives at stake here. Over 50 people have died in ICE custody since Trump took office. Over 10 people have been killed by ICE in our streets. There's the Middle East and what's happening in the Iran war as well. Like, we have to stop American service members from dying. We have to stop Iranians from dying. Palestinians, Lebanese people. Right now, Trump and Israel are trying to spark a Lebanese civil war by cozying up to this kind of puppet Lebanon government and trying to say that they're not going to end their military campaign in the south before Hezbollah is fully disarmed. I mean, that means like a complete civil war for years and years on end. Israel and Trump seem to be completely in favor of that. There are lives on the line here. We need to have senators who might be able to put a stop to this. How about, you know, these insurrectionist judges and everything that are going to be that Democrats could stand in the way of? Horrible nominees. I'm sure there will be firings and everything. We need these Senate seats, like, more than anything. And so I don't understand somebody who is putting their ego ahead of our democracy right now. Like, you should be ashamed. You should be ashamed. And that's in the same, it was the same reason why as well, once it became clear, you know, like that Janet Mills, right, was not going to be an exciting enough nominee, why we were enthusiastic about Plattner was not because we wanted to elect him as the greatest man in America and vouch for everything about him, but because I had faith that that kind of campaign, with the popularity that he was gaining in the state of Maine with that voting base, could have defeated Susan Collins. This is about the electoral politics.
It could harness the.
We have to win power.
It could harness the movement, and it did. And now that movement is in Troy Jackson's
exactly
thing, and we can play. And yeah.
And regardless of what happened there, despite, you know, Plattner, I think, letting a lot of supporters down and people that backed him and Mainers down, and of course the accusation in and of itself is horrendous. The silver lining is that the infrastructure of a campaign that was run the right way with people power and organizing and going all across the state still remains. And so Troy Jackson should be able to take up that mantle. But back to this other Senate race that, you know, I was just kind of ranting about. This Paxton is also, it's not just any Republican. All Republicans are horrendous. But this is the Republican that we have to, that is up against Tallarico. He's one of the most despicable people in politics, Ken Paxton. On another level, if Trump's the most corrupt guy in America that's in political office right now, or maybe Ken Paxton's number two, here he is at a press conference the other day when he's asked about owning 15 homes on a government salary in Texas, which is not high. They don't pay their members of like the state house anything, right? And that's part of the reason.
Yeah, so they need daddies.
Exactly. So that this is why I support things like, you know, maybe doubling or tripling even congressional salaries while also being in conjunction with campaign finance reform, because then they would be less reliant on outside corrupting money. But that's putting that to the side. They don't make much money down there in Texas from their public office. And this guy has 15 homes. So he literally runs out of this press conference here when asked about
that.
And
he's also asked about voting at possibly committing voter fraud by voting not at the place he should be voting at.
Yeah.
General, I wanted to give you a chance to respond to State Representative Tallarico and his campaign. They've made a lot about the reports that have come out. One in the New York Times about you acquiring properties worth
nothing. So, Jack, can we keep this to law enforcement today?
Well, I'm giving you the opportunity to.
For folks just listening, he's in front of, like, I mean, a large amount of sheriffs in identical hats, and he's trying to hide behind them like shields. Stop asking me about my corruption. I'm here with men of the law.
Who, you know, just in terms of surface area, it would be easier to hide behind guys with those big hats there just to get that head, you know, that big ass head behind that surface area.
For folks that look at the image of those guys up there and think like, oh, this is what lawmen look like, I would check out the Confession Killer documentary that went into how Texas Rangers basically let a guy lie about committing every murder so they could claim that they were closing all of them, and he became known as like the number one serial killer of all time, and it was all horseshit. Texas Rangers are corrupt. But anyway, here is them, Ken Paxton, trying to hide behind them.
That have come out, one in the New York Times about you acquiring properties worth nothing.
So, Jack, can we keep this to law enforcement today?
Well, I'm giving you the opportunity to answer that question.
I'd like to, but we're here with the sheriffs, I'd like to keep today to law enforcement. So
it's not your choice.
That's what I'm going to answer, questions about law enforcement.
Okay.
Grimmer, did you want to go?
Will you answer a question about why you voted in Collin County?
So we're just going to do questions on law enforcement today because we're joined with 22 amazing law enforcement officers. Thank you, guys.
I have a question.
Yeah, we're going to get out of here. Thank you.
Can we not have...
We have great law enforcement officers that you should respect. Okay.
They're sensitive. They can't be like privy to this kind of conversation. They need to be like, you know, protected. They're sensitive ears.
All right. Those men are corrupt is what I would say about them.
First of all, Tallarico handcuffed to his record is a little weirdly horny, but I guess they're trying to make this law enforcement connection. I don't know. Bringing that up, I don't think that's a very effective graphic, but like, you're a public servant and you're running to be one of the 100 senators in this country. It's as powerful as it gets. You got to answer whatever fucking questions are leveled at you.
You were impeached by a Republican House in Texas for bribery.
Yeah.
But we're trying to keep this to law enforcement.
Right. I mean, Trump's tried this before when he called into CNN. He's been like, I thought we were just talking about, you know, this X, Y, and Z, this successful thing. You don't get to decide. But that's why they're so invested in capturing the media. It's because everything they want to turn our press into public relations. Fibs Knight says the image of Ken Paxton standing in front of a poster that says handcuff him to his record while avoiding questions about his own record is hilarious. I mean, how about literally handcuff him and take him to jail? That might be nice. Tennessee Sam, all hat, no cowboys. Listen to Black Voices says MR and LR worked backwards from the white Boy Scout that has the look that can win the Texas Senate. We know what the look is. I never said that his look could win, but I did say he's a
idiot.
Boy Scout. We heard it with Plattner too. Working backwards They made Crockett into a villain. They didn't campaign for Tallarico, but against Crockett, and Crockett clocked it. Now they are mad. Crockett is imploding out of pride in spite of their racism. They wouldn't try. They wouldn't understand it, but don't even try. Well,
keep listening, you fucking idiot.
I don't know. I mean, what's the stuff with Crockett, too? Like, it's so selective.
We were right about Crockett. Yes. Calling her an egomaniac. It's very obvious.
She would have been a horrible candidate.
Everything she's done since has proven everybody exactly right.
Yeah, that Netflix trailer where she's claiming that she was redistricted out of her race is a lie. Her district got more blue, and now there's a better representative in Haynes that's going to likely take it in November and actually stands up for the genocide. That's not to say that Tallarico's record on that is amazing, but the way that she campaigned, I did not think was as strong as the way that Tallarico campaigned.
Neither did Texas primary voters.
Right, which is what matters. Tallarico went all across the state. He did the best of what Beto O'Rourke was doing, which was not this like media-focused campaign where Allred, who lost in a worse fashion last cycle, that he was doing. It's about, in the same way with Plattner, I know this might be hard, this might break your brains, but it's about the way that they're campaigning as well versus these more consultant-backed campaigns, like with Mills and like with Crockett. The grassroots organizing and the on-the-ground campaigning that both Plattner and was engaging in, and now Troy Jackson is taking up that mantle, and the way that Tallarico is campaigning, is a method of organizing and campaigning that I believe in. It does not have to do with even my issues with Crockett not being, I think, a good messenger for these issues, and the fact that she seems to have some issues with, like, the truth and centering herself in this very bizarre way. Like, if she was all of that and still the talented communicator and, like, kind of and figure that she is, because she did some good stuff in terms of, like, propaganda value in Congress, questioning some of these Republicans.
Yeah, call Marjorie Taylor Greene a bitch.
Right. If that was all that there is, and she was still campaigning in the way that Tallarico had campaigned, I would have been a lot more optimistic about her campaign, and I wouldn't have been as strong in saying that Tallarico would have been the better candidate. So this is just a very bizarre conversation to me.
It's a conversation that should be completely ignored as not relevant to, I think, like, and I've spent plenty of time on Crockett, but this is unserious. I honestly think that IM might have been a joke, but even if it was in complete earnest, I think voters are smarter than that. And hopefully it doesn't lead to a under turnout for James Tallarico. Because I think Paxton is bad, and I think voters might be smarter than this, frankly. I think this conversation is entirely moronic.
Yeah. Autistic Mandalorian, isn't there a full highlight reel of Glitch McConnell freezing during press conferences and being escorted away from the podium? The question isn't if he can still do the job, it's why hasn't he been replaced already? Yeah, exactly. Juniper J, Governor Beshear should fill the Senate seat or call the election to fill it. Make McConnell talk to a reporter to prove he's alive. It's what Republicans would do if the situation was reversed.
That is a good model. Is like, what would Republicans do if this was a Democrat here?
Ad Hominem says, can't they just let a couple AP reporters visit Mitch and put everything to rest? I know what you mean by that. Cricket Gnome's Revenge says, Charlie Kirk was killed by death. If they really wanted to arrest someone, they'd show up on set when he films the next Family Guy episode. We are Bork. Crazy that they can't use AI to generate audio of him speaking, but then he would just sound like he did earlier this year, which was unintelligible. Science is political. Jasmine Crockett supports fascism through her petty actions. I mean, it's hard to say otherwise right now.
I mean, I've heard rumblings that she might come around to endorsing Tallarico, which she should do. But the problem is, like, it would be admission that this entire time she's been pretending, well, I'm just gonna not endorse him and pretend like I can just help the down ballot races in a way that still hurts Republicans was stupid and insulting to people's intelligence. And maybe then maybe people can move on.
Hey, listen, there's plenty of time before the general election. There's nothing wrong with doing that. That's the right thing to do. You know, that's what every, you know, centrists and moderates and establishment type candidate supporters always bring up how, oh, you know, the left did this. But the majority of leftists, at least the ones that, you know, come on this show, including the show, you know, this show's hosts, we advocate for pushing politicians. But then when it comes down to it, we always tell everyone that, you know, you do have to vote for the whatever candidate is going to keep Republicans out of power. And, yep. You know, we've supported a lot of candidates that we don't necessarily like, but we do the what I consider to be the right thing at the end. I mean, I've just at presidential elections, wasn't a big fan of Hillary nor Biden nor Kamala, but I voted for all three of them when it came down to it.
Yep. Pizza dog. MR has Cory Bush on and gets accused of anti-black racism in the same
because it's not club. Serious. These people aren't serious.
Yeah. Meg MCA, in this day, and are we just mourn the end of Mythbusters? They would have made a ballistic gel Charlie and run through all of the theories.
They sure would have.
And then put Buster on in a Cybertruck and dropped it off a cliff. That's pretty
good. We're not a curious, serious society anymore. Bill Nye would have been doing stuff like... Bill Nye would have been doing
busting myths.
Exactly. Ever since we stopped busting myths and started believing them, we stopped being a real society.
That's so true.
Could you imagine, like, back in the day, we'd have Bill Nye on the job talking about like physics. We'd have Miss Frizzle shrinking the bus in class down and going inside Charlie. You're going inside Charlie to figure out what happened.
Take the bus inside his throat. You didn't even need to shrink down to get in there.
And now.
Miss Crystal has the windshield wipers going crazy entering that neck. Oh, my God. This is a rainstorm here.
You joke, but now all we have is Candace.
Who's
the last Mythbuster alive.
I mean, she's under shaky ground now because of the Andrew Tate thing, and she went kind of hard to bat for him, but he also hasn't been on lately, so I'm curious how she's going to play this.
Not as hard as the PBD boys are going for him.
Well, here we go. Let's okay. So, let me find this number here. Okay, it's number 15. Andrew Tate brothers, the Tate brothers, Andrew and Tristan Tate, have been arrested on new charges of rape and sex trafficking in the UK. So, they're hopefully going to be extradited there, and hopefully those stick because these guys are predators, and they already were facing sex trafficking charges in Romania. But Barron Trump likes the misogynistic streamers, so Trump let them back into the country and back to Florida, where Trump knows all about predators running wild and taking advantage of girls and women. His best friend used to do that very kind of thing, and he engaged in it, most likely. Now, that's an aside. The PBD crew, I guess, is talking here about the Tate brothers. And what a shock. They're expressing skepticism about the validity behind these arrests. Here are Vinny, PBD, and Tom. No, what's the other guy's name?
Yeah, Adam Sosnick does call in later.
Sosnick will appear. He is remote. I'm not sure.
I think he was invited on this corporate retreat.
Yeah.
He has to stay in silence per PBD's direction and consider his next moves after.
Or they couldn't peel him out of Magic City in time to make his flight.
Yeah. It's just three of the guys in studio at the very least. Here they are talking about the arrests of the Tate brothers.
These pro-family guys
are back at it again. They're in Miami. Tate brothers are back at it again. They're in Miami promoting a fight. And suddenly, while they're in Miami promoting a fight, what page is this on, by the way? While they're in Miami promoting a fight,
it's a bare
knuckle
fight.
Story. Yeah. Social media influencers, Andrew and Tristan Tate, are arrested in Miami. And you see the video. I don't know if you have the video when they're going out there and arresting them. If you want to pull up the video of Tate, if you just type in on X, go on X, type in Tate arrest, you'll see the video while they pull up to him.
Could have probably had that ready.
So Andrew and Tristan Tate were arrested Saturday in Miami after the UK sought their extradition on dozens of charges, including rape and sex trafficking. The Tates, who are brothers, millions of followers, you know, they're kind of promoting them on who they are and what they were. The U.S. Marshals Service, this is it. Play the clip.
They're not promoting them, Patrick. They're just explaining. Like, what do you mean? Okay. Here they play the
providing context.
Thank you for playing it, though.
I do any chance to see him in.
It's so
to
funny.
The U.S. Marshal
his outfit.
In the Michael
they
Scott
said the arrest was made
style.
In accordance with the treaties and law enforcement agreement governing Justice Department extraditions. The brothers are expected to make an appearance at a federal court early next week. I think the court today, 9 o'clock, they were at court. Their lawyer, Joe McBride, for the brothers, said they are innocent. Andrew and Tristan Tate will walk free. America does not do Britain's political dirty work. Not here, never. The UK's Crown Prosecution Service said it authorized 42 charges against Andrew Tate, who is 39 years old. Tristan Tate, 38, faced 17 charges. The service said there's a total of 7 alleged victims, and you know that goes into all these other stories. But the judge,
yeah, the accusations that you're gonna about to dismiss, Patrick. I mean, we're about to, like, remember we saw that thing about them talking about having a bunch of kids, and some of them were like, well, I'm a family man. I couldn't possibly do that. We're about to see how none of these guys should be trusted anywhere near any kind of child.
The judge that they're facing, I believe today, I want to say the judge's name is Judge Lewis, I think, hardcore level 10 type of a liberal judge that we're talking about. So who knows what's going to happen
here?
Right,
so first of all, promoting, this is again the theme of and the weird bizarro nature of this multi-level marketing schemer trying to talk about things that are sort of like politics adjacent or at the very least in the realm of the legal system. I mean, when he says promoting earlier, that's what he used. It's analysis, like, but he can't see it any other way. And then he's talking about a level 10 liberal judge. Is this the steps that you take in Scientology? Like, this judge has really done enough and now has completely gone clear, which, you know, is so liberal and woke.
Those liberal justices, infamous for not supporting child trafficking. I mean, that's...
I mean, I think that is what is maybe for me so valuable about the PBD show, because they are the purest encapsulation of what like capitalism wants every one of us to believe, which is that the more money you have, the more moral you are, the less likely, the less possible it is for you to be doing bad things to society. And he's going to talk more about like how many people like are fans of Andrew Tate. It's all very clearly about how much money he gets, how popular he is online, things that PBD aspires to. And that colors, I think, his actual judgment in a way that for some Republicans are only pretending. Like, it colors the judgment that way.
The clout. I mean, there's rape and sex trafficking accusations, but the clout. That's what we
Tom,
need.
Tom, type in your computer a quote from Notorious B.I.G. something about more money. Pull that up for me.
Camp have never been fans of Tate's. DeSantis's camp have never been fans of Tate's. They've even called him out. Last time Tate was on a podcast, he called out DeSantis. And James Huthmeyer, who's a star in Florida, this guy's going to end up doing something long-term politically. Very talented, very capable. He even said a few things on
their lawyer?
X about him. So some of this stuff has to do with child pornography is what they're talking about, which, you know, to put that on them. Can you imagine UK, you have Rupert Lowe who comes out with a report with 200.
Okay, so this is actually a really important piece of news here. He's going to talk about this Rupert Lowe report. And Rupert Lowe is a right-wing MP, fascist Nazi. And he has this so-called report. But the report is entirely horse shit, not done with any sort of statutory authority with his office. It's crowdfunded, like, right-wing operation that purports to say that Pakistanis have raped, like, an insane amount of people, women.
Like bears.
Right.
Well, I mean...
Barely. Maybe even worse.
Worse, because, this is just, like, lies from Nazis. Whereas Vare's, like, does actually have a purpose. And people can check out this piece of Middle East Eye by Faisal Hanif that goes into what the history of this is, like the original guy who discovered Pakistani grooming gangs and has now become horrified that the right wing has blown up the issue in a way that completely ignores victims of rape committed by white men, for instance. But judging by these numbers, where you'll often hear that like 25,000 young girls have been raped by Muslim men.
It's higher. It's higher. Right. They'll say things like 250,000, not in this video, but when a separate video, they say things like 87.6% of sexual assaults in the UK are committed by Pakistanis. And just hearing that number, you should go like, that's impossible.
Yeah.
But it's so high that it ultimately, it's sick because it erases the fact that like the reality is that most people are likely to be sexually victimized by someone they're acquainted with, either a family member, someone that they're on a date with. You're just more likely to be victimized by somebody who looks like you than by like roving gangs of minorities. And so like there are just so many people's like stories who just like co-opts to be about like some migrant panic.
Right. And like, this is not a new tactic. We've said this when we've spoken about the issues with that New York Times piece, Screams Without Words, that got a front page, whole spread by the Times, where they didn't directly talk to victims of October 7th. They talked to people who had heard about rapes that had allegedly happened on October 7th. And then they also took a further step to say it was systemic.
Lake and Riley Act.
Yeah, the Lake and Riley Act's another example. But then we go back to the Jim Crow South. We go back to slavery as well, where black men were portrayed as especially dangerous to lily white women. And often that was the justification for lynchings. Emmett Till is an example of a woman who at the time lied as well about Emmett Till, and he was lynched and killed. This is an accusation that is thrown about usually by like white the white kind of patriarchy, because it gives them a moral justification for their racism, because they are protecting the women in their life as white knights against the hordes of black and brown people.
It's to license fascist violence, just like the Lake and Riley Act was about getting ICE in the streets. This is about they want to do mass deportations in the UK, and it's a slightly different approach they're taking, which is, again, like rape hoaxes. Go ahead, Brandon.
No, just one quickly, and it's also to create like a hierarchy of violence and crime within their own countries that essentially just acts to absolve certain, populations of being even able to do certain things like this, right? Like, by insisting that it's worse when it's just as bad when one Mexican does a crime as when 1,000, 100,000 white people do a crime. And with this new value system, it just automatically means that crime that is committed by certain types of people becomes less prioritized, which we already know our system does. But I mean, it's very clear, especially with their defenses of Andrew Tate and of Donald Trump, that this is meant to be like, well, it's just worse when it's done by a certain type of person.
Yeah.
50,000 Pakistanis, 87% of them being Pakistanis, this rape gang, and you hear nothing. But the first Muslim they go after is Andrew Tate. That's what it's come down to.
First of all, there's another guy that's currently on trial for rape right now that's pretty high profile in the UK named Russell Brand.
he's not in the UK right now.
Yeah. Oh, he's not.
But they would say for the
he's
same
in Mali.
Reason.
Oh, yeah, right. But
his case is in England, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, their argument would be he's being attacked for the same reason, is that he's getting too close to the truth.
I got lost in the racist fantasy.
I want to give a little bit of context for people not entirely aware of the Tates and how like obvious this is that they are predators. This is from a Too Lazy to Try. He's like a YouTube sort of drama creator, but he has a little compilation here. Here's 20 seconds of Andrew Tate and his brother talking about the type of situations they put women in.
A lot of the stuff they're being accused of.
And I became a multi-millionaire. I did this by creating a webcam studio, by taking girls who didn't know how to be effective on webcam, girls who had never done webcam before. I created a system that allowed me to convince girls to do this, allowed me to retain 100% control of their income, allowed me to make sure they were effective. I know how to make sure the girl can't run away.
And of course, they don't go out. They're not allowed out. You stay in the house.
Let them take full control over their accounts. They will run away. I like to keep the girl's passwords. I log them in and log them out. If you give the girl the password to her account, there's a chance she could run away and try it by herself.
I mean, case closed.
Where are these prosecutors and liberal judges getting this idea?
Right.
Tates. Where did they get this idea that the Tates were involved in nefarious sex trafficking and other horrible things? I think they went to
pickupartisttools.com.
Oh.
Hustler University was the actual name of Tate's one of Tate's pay monthly fee to learn how to make money online bullshit.
He's a scholar.
Well, it was also a pyramid scheme too to bring in these guys that then would recruit girls and women from oftentimes the global south and poorer areas of the world to essentially be enlisted for Andrew Tate or them to be their pimp.
Like, teach them webcam skills, Emma.
He's bragging about taking 100% of their income. I don't know how true that is, but it's like a glorified pimp situation. So
that's exactly what it is.
So, I mean, I think that sex work should be legal and regulated so that there doesn't you don't have, like with the drug market, when things are outside, under
in the black market.
In the black market, you have organized crime and exploitative practices that happen, including there's also for human trafficking. If you want to prevent that, we should have a more humane border policy so people don't, pay these cartels to take them over the border, for example, and then they get abused or kidnapped. Like, when you create black markets for things like sex work, these predators come in and steal from the women that are doing the actual labor and likely abuse them as well.
That's profit. And it's been a few years, so I can probably talk about it. I don't have a check of the law. But when I was on the grand jury, one of the cases was purportedly an assault case, a woman versus a man. And it turned out that she was webcamming in a warehouse among like dozens of other young women who found this opportunity through Craigslist, where it was suggested that they could come be models. And these young women, often needing money, go to these places and get entrapped in these exact fucking situations. And she didn't want to do what the guy, I can't remember exactly what it was, but he was asking her to do something on camera she didn't want to do, and then started assaulting her and got out a knife. This is what these guys are. This is not a metaphor to call them pimps. That's what they clearly like are accused of. And by any look at their public records, even the stuff that they have put on their websites for marketing materials, they are guilty as charged. So let's just get these family men down at the Valuetainment Studios in Miami to defend him a little bit more and see how they defend him.
Release people. Not all the other stuff that goes on where judges comes out and says, no. This is their way of living. Leave them. Not that. Don't look at that. No, not at all. UK is a safe place. This rape stuff is not happening. It's just a propaganda. But let's go get this guy, Andrew and Tristan Tate. It becomes a little bit weird. Yeah, right there. Hootmar, can you go to that tweet? How the turntables breaking Andrew and Tristan Tate have been arrested in Miami. Obviously, they can't stand
that's
here.
That's just the guy who's anti-Tate.
These guys with the women. Listen. Well, first, Pat, I, and again, people out there, they're these guys with the women. Listen, put all that aside. If you can't tell that this is all politically driven and motivated, like, you're being delusional, okay? I know Andrew. I know his brother. I can't speak for every single thing, every little minuscule thing, but you know what happened when you...
Vinny, can you speak for the withholding the women's passwords from the accounts that they make them webcam from?
I mean, I like how he accuses the UK government of political bias and then immediately says that he knows the people that are accused of these heinous crimes. And trust me, bro.
Are you blackmailed by them, Vinny? Have you done anything with them when you went out on them?
That's interesting.
Talk, and I'm not blaming them, Pat, but when you talk about the system, when you constantly are talking about the powers that be and the Matrix, it's not surprising that they're always going to come after you and they're never going to stop. I remember when Andrew, he was speaking to somebody and he said, The way that they work is first they take your money, then they try to destroy your reputation through the media, and then they try to kill you, okay? And as it seems, they're still working on the second one because this is going to be nonstop. This will never, ever, ever stop, Pat. And when it comes to this world of women and whatever, as we've learned through all the stuff that America's gone through with all these false allegations, with people just coming forward, all you need is an allegation. That is it. And if there's somebody in the system that hates you, they even look for these type of females. They look for these type of girls that say, oh, were you with him during this time and this time? Okay, just say this. We'll give you some money. That's how it's working. That's
You're
how
saying
it
that the UK government is doing that? Are you really claiming that? I mean, first of all, the way that this country has completely devolved since we had this moment of Me Too, of reckoning, is so depressing. And it is a well-funded campaign by on the manosphere side, by shadowy right-wing figures that wanted to promote this kind of thing. It became its own ecosystem. Go ahead, Brandon.
No, I won't interrupt you. Go ahead, finish.
I forget what the rest of my point was, so it was quite a convenient interruption.
Well, I was just going to say that, I don't think they are compromised in any, call me cynical. I don't think they're compromised in any way by Andrew Tate. I think ultimately they were just like groomed by him in some kind of way. They operate in that exact kind of world that is the target for this kind of misinformation. The only reason I would say that he didn't actually is because they were probably already like this. Like, there are just a lot of guys out there who already believe things like this, that Andrew Tate filled, stepped into a certain persona. And yeah, he's convincing younger kids to be more like this, but this was already a mentality that was like clearly out there. We saw that with the pickup artist shows. We saw it with all of the various misogynist like trends that predated Andrew Tate and have come after him. If anything, this is a reaction to Me Too, but Me Too was a reaction to this.
Yeah.
Like, Me Too was just a reaction to this mentality being so pervasive in the way people view like the world and the possibility of their like favorite being like someone who's transgressing against women in this particular way.
And it's just they're bringing charges against him in the UK. This isn't a publication and an accusation in a newspaper or on a blog. Like, the flattening of all of that, you're essentially claiming this idiot, Vinny, wearing a really stupid hat as well, like faith over fear.
The most fearful man.
As he quakes and thinks that people are going to come for him with paid accusations and then they're going to kill him. And I guess that's what he's anticipating. I mean, like, the idea that the UK government is paying women to accuse Andrew Tate and Tristan Tate of this, which they freely admitted to on camera, I don't know. Maybe there's an alternative explation.
This reminds me of when they said Bill Cosby was going to buy NBC. Remember that? And that's why he got all those accusations.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
It's not like the Tate brothers were known for being, like, upstanding, wholesome people before this. This is, like, the fifth time this has come up, if not, I'm being generous with my number of times this happened. The Tate brothers have been investigated, arrested numerous times before for these very things. It's not like this is completely out of left field. I mean, for me, it's out of left field that it actually looks like they actually might be held accountable at some point now. But the idea that this is not who they are, I mean, if you know the Tate brothers like you claim you know them, this is exactly who they
exactly.
are.
Exactly. They would almost be kind of maybe even disappointed in Vinny for being like, all right, let's not like make my record sound better than it is. We're pretty proudly really rapey and misogynistic.
I mean, amount of times they mention 16-year-old girls in that Too Lazy to Try video, I said, it's like really, we're dealing with really bad people here.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure they would say that's the age of consent in the UK or something, so that's okay or whatever.
Bulgaria,
but I would also point out, this is just like the Trump situation as well, because I think what this also reveals that a lot of guys like hanging out with other men who talk like this, maybe not exactly like Andrew Tate, but like Donald Trump calls locker room talk. But what they don't like is that a sub portion of those men are actively abusers, which is not to say that men who don't talk like this are not abusers, but that there are guys around them who talk like this, who people might think are abusers, and they make excuses for, because like, oh, that's just how men talk. And it turns out, no, that guy you hang out with who like talks about like victimizing women all the time is actually like victimizing women in a way that you deem to be inappropriate. Cause like, now that it involves children, then it becomes like something that they can't just kind of like, well, you know how women are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you want to get to Sosnick? Cause he's going to beam in.
Oh, wonderful. Good. I'm glad he gets to weigh in here.
Of 1,000 women, guys, the odds of some of them coming forward, even if it's a lie, are very, very high, especially when there's money involved and especially when there's people of high power that want to destroy you, and you're seeing it in real time.
Yeah. Adam, let's try you one more time.
PBD, you got me now, sir?
Go for it. Let's test it out.
Good, sir.
Great. Well, listen, I'll tell you, much like the 50 Cent album, Iran didn't want this podcast to come out. They must have done some internet blackout, but I'm here in a bunker ready to give you some answers. So we're talking about Andrew Tate, is that right?
Yes.
So let me just lay it on you with the Tates. I like the Tates. I'm rooting for the Tates. I think the Tates are the definition of poking the bear too hard, and now they're getting done dirty.
Yeah, poking the bear of doing sex trafficking in a high-profile way. I just like that PBD is worth, like, I think, like, $100 million or at least tens of millions of dollars, and they can't get Sosnick a microphone.
I mean, and what is the bear? Just, like, regular rules of civil society that you shouldn't rape? Yeah, I mean, this is how stupid they are. They are redirecting people's righteous anger about their inability to get ahead under capitalism and pointing it towards a movie reference for the dumbest people in the world who don't want to, like, actually, you know, they don't want to politically activate them as in a civic way. But they'll be activated on behalf of his multi-level marketing scheme. And if they want to do get-rich-quick kind of stuff, maybe they want to try to exploit OnlyFans models and take their wages from them and all of that. Like, that's the way that you get ahead, and we'll sell that to you. There's a reason why this show is probably quite well funded and continues to go on. It's because it truly, like, actually keeps you in, if you want to use this phrasing, but I wouldn't. I'm not an idiot, but I'm going to do it for this audience in case they're watching it. That's what keeps you in the Matrix, which is not understanding that collectivism and people power is the only thing that's going to change anything. Right. And, like, you can't reify your own masculinity or, like, assert the or feel like you have a dominant place in society just by exploiting women and doing get-rich-quick schemes. We have to systemically change society to make it better. And these guys are just keeping them placated. And also as predators, pretty much.
Who's the guy in The Matrix who, like, loves eating all the steak and stuff like that? Remember, he's like, he just loves living in The Matrix?
I don't remember.
He plays a guy in Memento. No,
I haven't seen Memento, actually.
No. Well, anyway, like, is there anyone more obvious? It'd be the Tates who are like, yeah, it's the Matrix. We're just living in it and accepting all.
You're thinking
of
Cypher.
I'm thinking of, is it Cypher? Is that
Joe Pantoliano is the guy's name.
And he's just like, I love the Matrix. I've completely, like, turned myself over to it. And
also, could you made by two trans women. Made by two trans women. Gotta say, The Matrix also made, like, another queer classic called Bound. So they should probably look into, if they want to keep referencing The Matrix, they may not realize who they're actually crediting.
Could you imagine if Neo dressed in The Matrix like how Andrew Tate was dressed when he was arrested? Like, instead of having the kind of all leather blade look, he dressed like a figure skater.
Right. Figure skater. I mean, even to the point where his pants are nearly tights, but God, wow, what an outfit to get arrested.
I will just put this up because people have been sharing this in the context of I got it yet.
Oh my God.
Michael Scott in the
That's so good. That's so good. Oh my God. Look, I'm not even a big Office fan, but that's a pretty perfect reference.
Honestly, that shirt is still not as tight as Andrew Tate's shirt was. No. There is no way Andrew Tate could have buttoned that shirt up.
Oh, that's hilarious. We'll do one. Let's do one more that isn't AOC because we covered her earlier. Let's just do this Trump speech stuff, which we didn't get to yet, really quickly. Trump rallied in Georgia yesterday. We've got to be talking a little bit more about his cognition really collapsing in front of our very eyes. Now, last week he did this crazy speech accusing China of meddling in the 2020 election, which he's definitely not still obsessed over losing. And the reasoning that he gave was that even though he was in charge at the time when he lost the election to Joe Biden, he was actually in power. The people that were supposed to be informing him about this so-called Chinese interference, they were hiding the information from him. He mentioned all the burn bags that weren't, they tried to burn them, but they weren't burned. And what's amazing, too, is that at the time, the DNI, the Director of National Intelligence, is now currently his CIA director, who he's accusing of keeping this information from him. And all of the information, when you mentioned VAERS earlier, this, like, what was discovered is that this so-called Chinese interference, these were basically like what VAERS is, which is just a tip line for people that say they have vaccine injury. It doesn't mean that the information is vetted yet, that it hasn't been studied yet. These are just claims. It's the same thing with intelligence. This is unvetted intelligence that he cobbled together that they weren't able to verify, and that's why they didn't bring it to you, buddy, to claim that China wanted to do some influence campaign in the United States on Joe Biden's behalf. And this was on the same day that Stephen Miller and Marco Rubio spoke to a bunch of foreign diplomats and talked about how basically we're bringing back McCarthyism, and we're going to target DSA. We're going to try to debank leftist organizations. We're going to try to lock them up and prosecute them. And then you pair it with Ken Klippenstein's reporting about NSPM7. They are trying to set a national security infrastructure for a red scare. And it's not a coincidence that Trump continues to talk about communism more and more on a day-to-day basis. This is also, by the way, how they're justifying this horrific siege on Cuba. And they're not necessarily ruling out future military action in Cuba. But right now we're a little bit overextended in Iran, so Trump can't get to the new thing that has caught his interest. So instead, let's blame the communists first domestically to set the predicate. This is what he had to say in Georgia about what the communist agenda is going forward.
It's done right, but when it's done right, there's nothing like it. The radical left is actively trying to destroy our children's future with the disaster known as communism. It's communism. This isn't a social democrat. These are communists. By another name, right? As I said in my recent address at Mount Rushmore recently, I don't know if anybody saw it, such a beautiful place.
He's fixated on it because he wants to be on it so badly.
You know, the communists want to take it down. They try taking Mount Rushmore down. They want to blow it up. They want to take it down. They shouldn't be up there. These people are crazy. But communism is, in my opinion, communism is the single greatest threat to our country and its history, including even World War I and World War II, Pearl Harbor, 9/11.
Well, whatever. Dude, the communists were fighting alongside against the Nazis in World War II. The Russians, the Soviet Union lost many, many more soldiers than the United States did, and we're fighting for a much longer period, but whatever. Did you see on the DSA website that the number one agenda item is that they want to blow up Mount Rushmore?
Yeah, bunker buster.
Yeah. It's for the people. The mountain should be for the people. I hadn't heard about this before.
Well, because there's all this talk, like we saw with Crystal Ball and Adam Smith, where he's like, you want to defund the entire military? You look at the DSA thing, it's like, we want to take half of the funding from the military and put it towards useful things. But the rest of the half of the spending goes towards things like blowing up Mount Rushmore or Stone Mountain, which that's the Confederate one down in Georgia, so blow that the fuck up too. Yeah, we're going to do a little bit of an explosion.
Yes, I mean, even though DSA is not the Weather Underground, that's just what they say publicly. Behind the scenes, everybody's talking about all the monuments that we can.
We're just the Weather Underground for racist monuments. So
yeah, and I think Trump wants to be on it very badly. I don't know why he continuously brings up Mount Rushmore, except for that reason.
He's definitely asked.
Of course
he wants to be on Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, I wonder who he would want to replace, actually. Maybe this is his projection, once again, that he wants to blow it up and just put four Trumps up there.
Just put a giant papier-mâché Trump above all of them.
Right. It'll be like his renovations of the White House. Yeah. You know, just tear this wing down. Maybe he'd keep TR up there. Yeah.
No. Actually, we should let him do it, because like he would definitely end up commissioning a terrible version of it, and so it would end up looking like just amazing.
Oh my god! Gold accents.
Yeah, he'd give him some, like, gold teeth. Like, they would have him like smiling, like one of his Trump smiles, and the teeth would be gold, like a rapper, and it would still like not look like him. It would look like, I don't know, anybody else.
They like mess it up and have to make it out of plywood.
Or here is another part of this rally, and once again, he is struggling cognitively. I don't know what this means. Here he is talking about John Ossoff in the state where he's a senator.
And yet, you're terrible, Senator John Ossoff. He's terrible. And the Democrats in Congress are voting with the communists every single time. They're afraid of the communists. You look at it. Now, I fought Ossoff before, as you know, and we won. We had a great success against this guy. He reminds me of Pinky Herman. Do you ever see Pinky Herman?
The crowd is laughing, and they don't know what the hell he's talking about. What do you mean you fought John Ossoff? You dueled him? What happened?
I beat his ass.
Yeah. I can't even imagine Trump actually getting into a physical tussle, by the way, with someone who is not his wife or a woman that he's abusing, because he doesn't like to expend any energy, because his body's like a battery, right? That would just bring him to an
That's
early
grave.
That's
how easy grave. It was. He went out like a bitch.
He was bleeding from his wherever. That's why I call him Pinky. That was the stain he met. He Pinky left Herman. On the carpet. Pinky Herman.
Wait, I found Pinky Lee is a talk show from the 50s.
That is 100% where his brain is.
I put a clip in there and watch the intro of the show and see if you think it left an impression on young Donald J. Trump.
Okay.
Pinky Herman.
From Hollywood, California, Jesus. We bring you the Pinky Lee Show with a carload of gags, giggles, and games for everybody. And now,
oh my god!
It gets worse.
He's kissing.
Oh no!
Oh no!
This is where his formative ideas about consent happened. That's why he's thinking about it. So he mixed
I
up
Pinky Lee.
He mixed up Pee Wee Herman, but he was thinking back to Pinky Lee. And how this is his greatest wish, a group of women that are forced to kiss him even against their will.
And children. You can take liberties with these women and kids.
Well, who's the initial...
Kiss them in the wherever.
Who's the initial guy before Steve Harvey, who hosted Family Feud, who would like...
Louis Anderson?
Yeah, didn't he always kiss the contestants too?
I wouldn't be surprised. he helped a lot of young, skinny male comedians on their way up.
Okay, well then all is forgiven.
No, I don't... Never mind.
Okay. All right, guys, going to read some IMs and get out of here. Doka Pills.
Pinky Herman.
Doka Pills. I love how he pronounced address, the Gettysburg address. I didn't catch how he pronounced that, actually. Barry from the Shy. Useless trivia. Michelle Obama went to high school with the directors of The Matrix. That is useless, but I'm happy to know it.
That's interesting.
Emma Stan says, I'm so done with the alleged allegation victimization BS. Patrick Kane is being welcomed back to the Blackhawks with open arms after having allegations against him. Just one of the countless examples. Yeah, I was extremely against the Rangers acquiring him, and I'm disgusted that he continues to be in the league.
Did you see Jake Sullivan regrets not doing more to restrain Israel?
Yeah, we did. I thought we talked about that yesterday.
Oh, yeah, this is an old tweet, sorry.
Yeah. 502 Drew, where, wow, when you say the names Hillary, Biden, and Kamala out loud like that, it really highlights how effing pathetic the Democratic nominees for president have been. No wonder a clown like Trump was able to win twice against that group. Definitely. Appalachian leftist, you should have Michaela Barnett for Tennessee's second on, trying to knock Tim Burchett out. It's a long shot, but she's actually engaged in the community, and hopefully irritation at Republicans could put her on the
That's going to be tough because Tim Burchett is Brian's favorite lawmaker.
Yes. It might be too heartbreaking for Brian.
No, it might even be better because then he can just focus on social media.
Yes.
Really, skateboarding.
He could be an influencer.
Skateboards.
You can honestly manect him to make content just for you. Bespoke Burchett.
Brian's asking for a raise because he's spending all his money. Tim Burchett manect.
All right, five more.
Can I charge us to the company card?
Well, do we even have a company card? Yeah, maybe. Five more and we're going to get out of here. Patrick Pet David says, if Kamala said she would be so different, she would do different than Biden, then how would she handle people who ask, why didn't you say anything during your time as VP and accuse her of being opportunistic? I mean, she cautioned on that side, but that she had a choice and she made the wrong one because it would have been... It was much more riskier to stick with Biden than it was to actually have to explain that.
And again, there's history of Hubert Humphrey and LBJ, and she decided, and I don't really understand what she thinks her avenue back is. She made that decision to be subservient to a president committing genocide, and it blew up in her face and probably, I think, ruined her career.
I think, like, also the average Democrat, I would say, doesn't have antipathy towards Kamala Harris in the way that, like, right now the base is disgusted with Schumer, for example. But I do think that, like, I think they generally like Kamala, but the consensus from pretty much anybody I've spoken to who is not as far as left as me as is like, just don't run for president, girl. I mean, I think a lot of people feel that way. I don't know why she's insisting on it except for ego.
You got
and
the infrastructure
nonsense
built up.
Yeah, I mean, I guess
I got this car, we might as well drive it.
Yeah. Fun half enjoy. Richard Dawson was another Family Feud host that loved kissing the female contestants. I guess I was thinking of Richard Dawson. North Dakota Llama. Sam's wall is full of company cards. He's a big Hollywood star now. He can afford it. Two more. California Resistance. Emma, you may forget PBD blew up over 6 years ago because of his silly YouTube episodes with Sammy the Bull and other mafia content. This gave Valuetainment the most views. He wasn't even on the political grift yet. I did not know that.
I did know that.
That's some useless knowledge for you.
I love all those mafioso podcasts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I could see that. And the final IM of the day... Michael Sarah Palin says, I do want to blow up Mount Rushmore and give it back to the Lakota Sioux as it was considered sacred ground and it was guaranteed to them under the 1868 Treaty of Fort Laramie until the U.S. government discovered deposits of gold.
Yep.
And then further desecrated it with the faces of leaders of a nation that committed a genocide against the indigenous tribes. So, yeah, fuck Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, it was literally supposed to be there for the tribes. I don't know if it's just the Lakota, but most notably... And as like a holy site, like it is very different ecosystem than the rest of the Dakotas. And people should go there. It's amazing. And then around Custer times, it's like, oh, there might be precious minerals in there.
Right.
And so we need to settle and in fact, like build a town called Custer that exists to this day in the Black Hills. Yeah.
All right, guys. Appreciate you all. Thank you so, so much. Thanks, Binder. Thanks, Brandon. Thanks, Matt and Brian. We will see you tomorrow.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm going to get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. Finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in. And my pilot light's shining bright.
breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive.